All right. Welcome, everybody. And I believe we are ready to get started. So, warm welcome to this conference on the incredibly important topic of public country-by-country reporting. And first of all, a warm thanks to the S&D Group for having welcomed us all here and invited us to discuss this important issue, as well as for all the work that the S&D Group is doing to promote this issue in the European Parliament. My name is Tove Reiding, and I come from the European Network on Depth and Development, also known as Eurodad, and I will do my best to cheer you all safely through this conference. First of all, we have interpretation. So if English is not your preferred language, you can also choose Spanish or French or German or Italian. You will find the earphones next to you, and the appropriate channels can give you a translation. I will try to make sure that the speakers speak slow enough for the interpreters to keep up today. The other thing is that we have a Wi-Fi connection, and in order to get access to the Wi-Fi, you need to go to the Wi-Fi that's called CPCR 2016, and the password is the date of today, so it's 16/11/2016. If you go to the website socialistanddemocrats.eu, you will have a chance to see this room being live streamed on the internet. Now, if you would like to share this conference with some of your Twitter followers or on Facebook, please feel free to do so. But you can use the hashtag CBCR, because then we can all keep an eye on what everyone is tweeting from this room, and you have a chance to retweet each other. I think that was all for the first practical introductory remarks. And without any further ado, I will go to our first speakers and hosts of today. And the first speaker we have is Evelyn Regner, who is not only Okay, I'm very happy for you to switch spots. All up to you. It's your conference. All right, we'll start with Hugues Payet then, who is the Econ Rapporteur on this issue for the S&D Group. The floor is yours.
Merci. Je vais parler moi en français. Donc pour ceux qui veulent continuer en anglais, c'est le numéro 2. Bonjour à toutes et à tous et bienvenue à notre atelier sur ce dossier important qui est le CBCR, Country by Country Reporting. Merci de participer avec nous parce que je pense que nous allons pouvoir aussi, Evelyne et moi-même, puisque nous coordonnons cet atelier, nous nourrir de tout ce que vous allez pouvoir nous dire, poser comme questions et tous les échanges que nous allons pouvoir avoir ensemble. Alors vous le savez, c'est un dossier important parce que ces dernières années, les scandales fiscaux, LuxLeaks, WikiLeaks, Panama Papers, Bahama, etc., etc., ont été vraiment au cœur de l'actualité européenne. Et je pense que si nous voulons vraiment avoir un marché unique sain au sein de l'Europe, ben, il est essentiel d'instaurer un système commun d'imposition des sociétés qui soit à la fois équitable, efficace, mais aussi propice à la croissance et qui tout simplement est fondé sur le principe selon lequel les bénéfices, ben, elles doivent être imposés là où le pays génère son activité économique, ce qui manifestement est loin d'être le cas à l'heure actuelle en Europe. Et donc, c'est évidemment très difficile à expliquer politiquement à nos citoyens, à nos entreprises, parce qu'il n'y a plus de réponse sur la hauteur de cette évasion fiscale en Europe. Hein. Vous savez que c'est quand même plus de 1 000 milliards d'euros d'évasion fiscale chaque année. Et c'est une concurrence qui est vraiment déloyale entre les entreprises elles-mêmes, mais aussi entre les entreprises et les citoyens. Et clairement, nos PME en Europe et nos citoyens ne peuvent pas bénéficier de tous ces avantages. Ils sont uniquement réservés aux multinationales. Et donc, plus que temps que nous réglementions tout cela et que nous trouvions des solutions pour mettre fin à ces dérives. Et on ne part pas de rien, puisque depuis LuxLeaks, malgré que la fiscalité n'est pas une compétence directe de l'Union européenne, je pense que ce Parlement a beaucoup travaillé, a écrit beaucoup de textes et beaucoup de propositions pour lutter contre ces dérives, et notamment sur toute une série de propositions des socialistes et sous la houlette de nos différents responsables, que ce soit Roberto Gualtieri comme président, Pervenche Berès, notre coordinatrice, ou encore Peter Simon, notre coordinateur pour la commission d'enquête Panama Papers. Donc on ne part pas de rien, on a déjà notamment les rapports DAC 3, 4 et 5, 3 sur l'échange d'informations des tax rulings, DAC 4 sur le reporting pays par pays, et maintenant DAC 5 sur toutes les données qui sont liées au blanchiment d'argent. C'est vraiment toute une série de mesures qui permettent d'atteindre l'objectif d'une fiscalité plus juste. On a aussi évidemment, vous vous en rappelez, nos deux dossiers finaux, TAX 1 et TAX 2, qui étaient sous la houlette de Elisa Ferreira pour TAX 1 et Yepé Kofod, TAX 2, qui ont redéfini comment il fallait entendre les rescrits fiscaux, où on a longuement parlé de l'AXIS, qui, nous l'espérons tous, va bientôt arriver, des aides d'État, des boîtes à brevets, des lanceurs d'alerte, etc. Donc toute une série de mesures qui, je pense, sont quand même très positives et qui ont été proposées pour la toute grande majorité par les socialistes. Le rapport aussi de notre collègue Anne-Lise Dotz qui se cache derrière son bébé, enfin qui était là tout à l'heure, en vue d'harmoniser toute une série de pratiques fiscales. Et puis enfin mon propre rapport sur l'évasion fiscale des multinationales, où on a essayé de remettre un peu d'ordre là-dedans pour éviter tout cela. Et franchement, ce qui nous a aidé, c'est la pression citoyenne, c'est les ONG, c'est les groupes de pression, les syndicats, etc., parce que je pense que moralement, plus personne ne peut accepter cette situation. Et c'est pour ça qu'avec Evin et le groupe socialiste, nous avions décidé d'organiser ce débat. Alors, Evelyne vous en reparlera un peu plus longuement que moi. Ce Country by Country Reporting est un dossier important et va être une mesure phare pour l'avenir de la fiscalité en Europe. Mais il y a quand même toute une série de questions qu'on doit se poser, sur lesquelles, j'espère, nous pourrons parler plus longuement dans le cadre de l'atelier. Tout d'abord, je ne vais pas être exhaustif, je vais prendre 4-5 points qui me semblent importants. C'est le champ d'application qui est proposé par la Commission, puisque la Commission exige que les multinationales publient leur country by country report à l'intérieur des 28 États membres et dans les juridictions de la liste noire. Et en plus, les données pour les tiers ne seront publiées que sous forme de données agrégées. Mais ça, si on veut réellement une réelle transparence des multinationales, je pense qu'il faut vraiment tendre à ce que le CBCR soit complet et obligatoire pour avoir un aperçu vraiment très clair des entreprises. Et donc, je pense que là-dessus, on doit encore travailler. Cette directive, elle touche en fait les multinationales qui dépendent de l'action 13 du BEPS, donc les multinationales qui ont un chiffre d'affaires de 750 millions d'euros. Je pense, enfin nous sommes plusieurs ici puisque Sergio a travaillé sur ce dossier, il faudrait revenir sur la directive comptable et donc baisser le seuil à 40 millions d'euros de chiffre d'affaires ou 20 millions de bilan et 250 salariés. Sinon, la mesure n'aura pas beaucoup de sens auprès de nos concitoyens. Pour prendre un exemple belge, mais qui est connu en France et dans le monde entier, vous savez qu'en Belgique, nous sommes spécialisés dans le chocolat. Si vous ne le savez pas, je vous invite à les goûter. Si on prend le cas de Neos, par exemple, un chocolatier bien connu dans le monde entier, enfin qui s'appelle Jeff de Bruges en France ou Corneille Royale dans d'autres pays, c'est une entreprise qui est mondialement connue, mais elle n'a un chiffre d'affaires que de 600 millions d'euros. Mais je pense que pour monsieur et madame tout le monde, 600 millions d'euros, c'est impossible de considérer qu'une entreprise comme ça, aussi connue et qui soit aussi implantée dans le monde entier, ne soit pas soumise aux mêmes règles que les multinationales de plus de 750 millions d'euros. Et donc très clairement, il nous semble que le seuil de 40 millions d'euros est un seuil beaucoup plus acceptable que ce qui est proposé pour l'instant. Un autre élément sur lequel il faudra qu'on porte notre attention, c'est le format de la publication, qui ne doit pas du tout être négligé, puisque je pense qu'il est vraiment essentiel que les données soient à la fois uniformisées et dans des documents qui soient identiques pour toutes les entreprises. Sinon, on va encore comparer des pommes et des poires, et il nous faudra 5 ans de plus pour réformer ce qu'on aura voté. Je pense que c'est aussi un élément essentiel sur lequel on doit faire fort attention. Il faudra aussi aborder la question de la liste noire. Alors, vous le savez, nous, en Econ, et pour toutes les matières fiscales, on a toujours voulu une liste noire pour lister les paradis fiscaux. Mais ici, dans ce texte, je pense que si on met en place une liste du même type, on risque de passer peut-être à côté de l'objectif de transparence, qui est que toutes les multinationales publient leur comptabilité de la même façon. Donc, il va aussi falloir y réfléchir. Enfin, je pense aussi qu'il faut un contrôle des données qui soit fait par une instance européenne, parce que sinon ça n'a pas de sens. On va avoir toute une série de données, mais qui ne seront pas étudiées, compulsées, comparées. Et donc il faudrait peut-être envisager de redonner un peu plus de pouvoir à notre administration européenne qui est Eurofisc et lui donner cette capacité de pouvoir contrôler tout cela. Et enfin, un dernier élément, c'est évidemment l'élément des sanctions. Puisque malheureusement, on connaît tous l'être humain et son avidité ou sa recherche perpétuelle d'avoir toujours plus et mieux. Alors parfois c'est très bien, mais en termes d'évitement fiscal, c'est peut-être pas le bon choix. Je crois que s'il n'y a pas de sanctions à la clé, le système ne marchera pas. Et vous savez, les États-Unis ont beaucoup d'erreurs, mais je crois que c'est les premiers en 1863 qui ont inventé cette loi où si vous trompez le trésor public, si vous ne payez pas vos impôts, si quelqu'un le dénonce, cette personne touche entre 15 et 25%, je crois, de mémoire, de la somme qui ne rentre pas dans la caisse de l'État, et celui qui est puni doit payer le double. Là, ça a clairement un sens, puisqu'on y réfléchit deux fois plus. Voilà, donc toute une série d'éléments importants à discuter ensemble. On est évidemment toutes et tous très ouverts à toutes les interventions que vous allez pouvoir faire et toutes les questions que vous allez pouvoir amener sur la table. Il y a aussi la responsabilité du Parlement, la responsabilité de la Commission, du Conseil, qui n'entend pas toujours comme nous les choses de la même façon. Mais ça, je vais céder la parole à ma chère et tendre collègue Evelyne, qui pourra vous entretenir de toutes ces questions. Je vous remercie et bon travail à tous et toutes.
Merci beaucoup. And yes, Evelyn Regner, who is not only the coordinator in URI, but is also rapporteur in URI for public country by country reporting. Over to you.
Thank you very much, Tove. I will switch into German. So, ich lade alle ein, die jetzt Kopfhörer brauchen, sie aufzusetzen. Ich nutze auch die Gelegenheit, heute wunderbare Übersetzung zu bekommen. Sehr geehrte Damen und Herren, liebe Genossinnen und Genossen, sage ich auch in dieser Runde, und natürlich auch sehr geehrte Teilnehmerinnen und Teilnehmer, die aus anderen Bereichen kommen und jetzt Näheres wissen wollen, ja, was wollen die Sozialdemokratinnen und Sozialdemokraten im Europäischen Parlament bei diesem Thema des Country-by-Country-Reporting, des öffentlichen Country-by-Country-Reporting, der länderübergreifenden Berichterstattung, die wir so dringend brauchen. Ich möchte in meinen einleitenden Worten nicht zu lange sein, weil wir haben fantastische Podien, die heute uns zur Verfügung stehen und von denen wir hoffen, dass wir deren Argumente natürlich in unsere Arbeit einbauen können. Vorweg, für uns Sozialdemokratinnen und Sozialdemokraten ist das ein absolut wichtiges Thema. Wir hatten heute nicht nur in der Fraktion, sondern auch im Panama Papers, im Untersuchungsausschuss, Herrn Stiglitz zu Gast. Und seine Kernsätze waren, Steueroasen sind die dunkle Seite der Globalisierung. Und Geheimhaltung bekämpfen kann nur oberstes Gebot sein für all diejenigen, denen es um Gerechtigkeit geht, für all diejenigen, die die Dinge wieder zurechtrücken möchten, wenn es um Unternehmen geht, die ihre Verpflichtungen wahrzunehmen haben. Da geht es um etwas ganz, ganz Grundlegendes für die gesamte Gesellschaft letztlich und nicht nur um reine Berichtspflichten. Die Richtlinie selbst ist die Zusammenführung der vierten und der siebten gesellschaftsrechtlichen Richtlinie über die Jahresabschlüsse von europäischen Gesellschaften. Und wir haben in der Vergangenheit als Europäisches Parlament uns ja nicht zum ersten Mal jetzt damit befasst, sondern wir haben uns in der Vergangenheit ja schon, wir haben ja schon geübt, wie das ausschauen kann, nämlich bei den Richtlinien, also Transparenzrichtlinie und bei den Änderungen zur Rechnungslegungsrichtlinie, als es um die rohstoffverarbeitende Industrie gegangen ist. Also auch hier gibt es eine länderspezifische Berichterstattung für entsprechend Zahlungen, die an Staaten gehen. Und natürlich, alle werden sich auch sehr gut daran erinnern können, als es um CRD4 gegangen ist, eben um die Überarbeitung ohne Wettbewerbsnachteile für europäische Banken, eben das eine Art CBCA einzuführen. Jetzt geht es allerdings noch um einiges weiter. Es geht darum, dass wir nicht nur bei Panama Papers, bei LuxLeaks, bei all diesen Ausschüssen ja festgestellt haben, dass wirkliche Perversionen im System stattfinden, nämlich dass systematisch Geldwäsche betrieben wird, dass systematisch all diejenigen, die, sagen wir, auf der dunklen Seite stehen und Geld über Drogenhandlung, Schmuggel und ich weiß nicht, was alles erworben haben, versuchen, dieses Geld aus dem Weg zu räumen, sondern noch zusätzlich, eben aus LuxLeaks-Ausschuss ersichtlich, dass es systematisch möglich ist, dass große Unternehmen nicht Steuern zahlen. Und das ist etwas, was so dermaßen ungerechtfertigt ist, dass es uns als Sozialdemokratinnen und Sozialdemokraten ein Anliegen ist, hier mehr oder weniger Nägel mit Köpfen zu machen und eben diese länderspezifische Berichterstattung einzuführen. Daher jetzt zu dem Vorschlag selbst noch keine Details. ÜK hat sie dargestellt, ist alles absolut zu unterstützen und wir in unterschiedlichen Ausschüssen, sei es der Rechtsausschuss, sei es der Econ, sei es der Panama-Untersuchungsausschuss, vorher LuxLeaks, sei es die ganze Fraktion, mehr oder weniger krempeln die Arme auf, um hier Licht ins Dunkel zu bringen und entsprechende Regeln einzuführen. Eine Sache ist nur klar und das soll meine quasi Botschaft jetzt schon vorweg sein für diese Konferenz, von der ich mir eben einiges an Argumenten erhoffe. Unternehmen sollen ihre Pflichten wahrnehmen. Es sind vor allem Klein- und Mittelbetriebe, die immer wieder diejenigen sind, die letztlich darunter leiden, dass so viele Große eben nicht ihre Pflichten erfüllen. Und was wir bisher wahrnehmen, ist auch, dass sich sehr viele im Moment ruhig verhalten. Staaten, große Unternehmen, die sind jetzt zurückhaltend, weil wir eben so streng sind in all unserer Aufdeckungsarbeit und in all der ungeheuren Ungerechtigkeit, die wir feststellen. Wir müssen jetzt gewappnet sein gegenüber all jenen, die im Moment noch still sind und immer wieder lauter werden, wie wir das jetzt natürlich auch aus dem Rat ersehen, nämlich, dass im Endeffekt diese länderweise Berichterstattung absolut notwendig ist und dass hier diesbezüglich auch schon wertvolle Vorarbeit geleistet wurde. Ich möchte da insbesondere an die Arbeit von Sergio Cofferati verweisen mit der Shareholder Directive. Hier wurden schon Pflöcke eingeschlagen, Nägel mit Köpfen vorbereitet und auf dem müssen wir jetzt aufbauen. Und insofern erhoffe ich mir nochmals eine erfolgreiche Konferenz, wertvolle Debatten mit Ihnen und möglichst viele Argumente.
Thank you so much. And indeed, our next speaker, I think for those of us who've been following country by country reporting for a while, is a bit of a legend. Sergio Cofferati fought for public country by country reporting before the European Commission had presented its proposal, and he did so under the Shareholders' Rights Directive. And I think indeed we can say that this work has increased the pressure on the European Union and the other institutions to deliver public country by country reporting. So thank you, and the floor is yours.
Grazie. Grazie al gruppo socialista per aver organizzato questo incontro. Grazie per le belle parole dei miei colleghi, ma leggenda vivente è eccessivo. Mi accontento del vivente. Abbiamo cominciato a discutere con molta determinazione di politiche fiscali in Parlamento, più di quanto non si facesse prima da qualche tempo per ragioni che sono appena state richiamate. Gli scandali LuxLeaks, emerso nel novembre del 2014, quello successivo di Panama Papers, hanno reso evidente agli occhi dei cittadini europei la dimensione del fenomeno dell'evasione e dell'elusione fiscale. Fenomeno grave in sé, perché viene meno la lealtà fiscale dei cittadini o delle imprese nei confronti dei singoli Stati, e questa sottrazione di risorse pesa ancor di più in una fase lunga, ancora non risolta per molti dei nostri paesi, di crisi. Mancano le risorse per fare investimenti e per dare senso compiuto ad una politica espansiva. Mancano queste risorse anche per garantire le protezioni e le tutele ai cittadini. Il welfare si basa sul contributo solidale che viene da parte di tutti di assoggettarsi lealmente a pagare le tasse in proporzione a quello che guadagnano. che siano imprese o siano cittadini, non vi è alcuna differenza. Ma c'è una cosa nuova e inquietante degli ultimi anni, che si aggiunge alla slealtà nei comportamenti, è l'alterazione dei meccanismi di competizione. Nel 2000 Jacques Delors, nel documento di Lisbona, proponeva un modello di competitività per l'Unione Europea basato sulla conoscenza, sul sapere, la scuola, l'università, la ricerca, la qualità del prodotto o del servizio come fattore principale della competizione. Oggi possiamo dire che la competizione tra gli Stati e spesso tra le aziende è, ahimè, basata sulla sottrazione di risorse attraverso la diminuzione delle tasse. Vieni a insediarti nel mio territorio non perché sono in grado di offrirti un ambiente culturalmente evoluto, culturalmente dal punto di vista della produzione, ma vieni da me perché ti faccio pagare meno tasse. Il meccanismo assurdo di LuxLeaks è questo. Ora, questa alterazione provoca non soltanto difficoltà al sistema europeo nel mercato globale, ma crea difficoltà rilevanti anche tra i singoli paesi europei, nei loro rapporti quotidiani. Abbiamo cominciato a parlare di questo tema esattamente per questa ragione e abbiamo introdotto per la prima volta un'ipotesi di soluzione dell'argomento in una direttiva apparentemente eccentrica. È la direttiva sui diritti degli azionisti. Io credo che chi decide di investire in un'impresa dovrebbe comunque conoscere qual è il comportamento e il livello di lealtà fiscale di quell'azienda. E però in ogni caso ci è parso utile provocare questa discussione e forzare, con qualche difficoltà, anche nei rapporti tra le varie famiglie politiche, una riflessione sul tema. Un risultato è stato ottenuto. La Commissione, per effetto della pressione dell'opinione pubblica, dopo LuxLeaks e ancora prima di Panama Papers, e anche per effetto della discussione che si è sviluppata in Parlamento, è stata costretta a presentare una direttiva specifica sul tema. Vorrei dire a questo proposito che è caduto verticalmente l'argomento, uno degli argomenti di ostilità a questa discussione. Si diceva, ma con un obbligo di rendicontazione paese per paese pubblico, le aziende non avranno più comportamenti di prima, non investiranno, se ne andranno altrove. Vorrei ricordare, ma molti di voi lo sanno, che c'è una direttiva del 2013 che vincola le banche alla rendicontazione paese per paese. Nel sistema bancario europeo non è successo nulla di ciò che si paventava per quanto riguarda le imprese. E se qualcosa è capitato, purtroppo è capitato, è di tutt'altra natura. Non c'è stata una competizione e dunque anche un allontanamento di risorse perché le banche hanno scelto altri liti. Ora, io credo che sia molto importante, come dicevano prima Hughes ed Evelyn, che si riporti il tutto, nei limiti del possibile, a dei criteri e a un ordine logico. Il primo è quello di dare continuità ai lavori che sono stati svolti in questo arco di tempo in parallelo, le due commissioni sulle tasse, adesso la commissione d'inchiesta su Panama Papers e le attività della commissione ECON legate a questo tema. E che poi occorra riprendere, Evelyn sarà la relatrice, l'approfondimento sulle questioni che riguardano specificamente la rendicontazione paese per paese da parte delle imprese. Perché è fondamentale la trasparenza, perché bisogna riportare la competizione nell'ambito che tanto stava a cuore a Jacques Delors e che interessa a noi esattamente come interessava a lui. E poi bisogna dare anche alle singole comunità la possibilità di avere risorse, quelle che derivano dal pagamento leale dell'obbligo fiscale, per poter investire e dunque per poter dare senso a una politica di crescita e di sviluppo che guardi alle persone più deboli, soprattutto a quelli che nel corso di questi anni si sono maggiormente indeboliti. perché la povertà è aumentata, perché le disuguaglianze sono cresciute in maniera spropositata. Allora, siamo finalmente arrivati ad una proposta. La proposta della Commissione è in verità un passo avanti, ma contiene ancora molti tratti deludenti, come già stato detto. La mancanza di pubblicità nei risultati della rendicontazione paese per paese, soglie troppo elevate per le aziende che saranno assoggettate a questo obbligo, mantengono uno squilibrio tra la piccola impresa e la grande impresa e poi rischiano di rendere più simbolico che concreto il provvedimento che dovrà essere varato. Dunque, si tratta qui di riportare le cose in una dimensione che abbia una sua logica, sia per quanto concerne l'esigenza della pubblicità, senza trasparenza non si combatte l'evasione e nemmeno l'elusione, e dall'altra parte del numero di aziende che devono essere coinvolte dal provvedimento che si discuterà. Ora, vorrei dire che è stato importante anche il lavoro dell'OCSE, che ha aiutato questa crescita di consapevolezza e di attenzione. Personalmente considero modesta la proposta che è stata fatta dall'OCSE, mi sarei aspettato di più per il rispetto e l'antica collaborazione con l'OCSE in altri momenti della mia vita. Però si tratta di cogliere tutti i segni positivi che sono in campo e di procedere per arrivare rapidamente ad una conclusione di carattere legislativo di questo obbligo. Perché rapidamente? È l'ultima cosa che volevo sottolineare. Perché noi dobbiamo tener conto di ciò che vivono e della sofferenza in virtù di ciò che vivono di tantissime persone in Europa. Gli scandali LuxLeaks e Panama Papers hanno creato molta attenzione, molta sensibilità, ma c'è anche grande attesa. E guai a noi se quegli scandali fossero poi accompagnati da provvedimenti negativi, addirittura da forme di restrizione della libera attività degli informatori, come invece si cerca di fare, ce ne sono alcuni addirittura sotto processo, cosa inaccettabile. Bisogna difendere chi lavora nell'interesse della sua comunità e bisogna contemporaneamente mettere le aziende in condizioni di parità, con obblighi però che devono essere assunti rapidamente. Non possiamo assolutamente perdere tempo. Per questa ragione io credo che la discussione di oggi sarà indubbiamente utile per le cose di merito che verranno raccontate, dette e commentate, ma anche perché dimostra che almeno il gruppo socialista vuol fare bene e in fretta. Le due cose insieme non sono impossibili. Lo è stato dimostrato in tante circostanze e credo che lo potrà essere anche in questa. Grazie.
Thank you very much. Now, before we proceed on in the program, just a kind reminder that we have three speakers now, and we will now follow a five-minute rule, which basically means that in 15 minutes it's your turn. So please have a think about which questions you can ask, and I think I can also promise that those of you who ask a question will get a coffee at 4 o'clock. It comes into the room. So there's a prize. But also to get a more lively and dynamic debate after we've heard the first opening statements. So please pay careful attention and also have a think about what you would like to ask our speakers. And we do indeed have a lot of interesting speakers here today. First, we're going to the United Kingdom, where we have Carolyn Flint, who is not only a former government minister, but also now a member of the quite famous UK Public Accounts Committee, which is particularly known for questioning multinational corporations about their tax arrangements once in a while. So warmly welcome and thank you for coming.
Thank you very much, and I'll be speaking in English. And could I thank Evelyn for inviting me as well. On the 5th of September, the UK government, a Conservative government, accepted my amendment to enshrining law the principle of public country-by-country reporting. So I'm going to use my 5 minutes to describe to you how we got there in the last year. I am a member of the UK Public Accounts Committee, and in February I heard firsthand from Google and our tax authority, HMRC, try to explain how £130 million represented a good deal after a decade's worth of unpaid taxes and reasons to justify non-payment. We did ask the European Director of Google to explain his taxes, but he couldn't answer the question when he was asked by Meg Hillier, our chair, how much he earned, so we weren't going to get very far on him understanding his tax obligations. And the truth is, in the absence of full transparency over the details of this settlement and how it was reached, we couldn't judge whether it was fair to taxpayers. Now, clearly, we are not alone. Around the world, politicians are questioning the loopholes and convoluted legal arrangements that present an inaccurate description of multinationals' trading activities in individual countries. Now, in line with the OECD's BEPS programme, from this financial year, large multinational enterprises with bases in the UK have to provide details on their revenues and taxes paid on a country-by-country basis to our tax authority. We know the problem isn't just confined to tech companies like Google, but their massive global presence today has exposed the fault lines of an old-fashioned tax structure that hasn't kept up with today's online business world. It isn't easy tax policy. It seems that no sooner has a tax loophole been closed, another one opens up. And it has brought into question the legal as well as the moral difference between tax evasion and tax avoidance. That is why transparency is so important. It can make a real difference to ensure fair taxation and, by the people we represent, that good old English phrase, fair play. So I decided to build a cross-party parliamentary campaign to legislate for public country-by-country reporting. Our hashtag was Show Me the Money. I managed to get the support of 8 parliamentary parties, my own party, Labour, of course, but also the Scottish Nationalist Party, the Liberal Democrats, the Welsh Nationalist Party, our sister party in Northern Ireland, the Ulster Unionist Party, the Green Party, and also the UKIP representative in the House of Commons, and a number of Conservative MPs too. And we're also supported by tax justice organisations and development organisations too. My vote on my amendment was originally to make sure we had legislation to enact it straight away. But the vote came 4 days after the EU referendum, and ministers were concerned about putting UK nationals at a competitive disadvantage. Plus, they were worried about moving alone, and because of these reasons, it swayed some of the Conservative MPs who were also supporting me too. We lost by 21 votes, but I decided to come back with a compromise. So in September, I came back with an amendment to enshrine in law the power for the government to introduce public country-by-country reporting without setting a date, but an enabling power. And it's important because it means that we can carry on with the campaign, and when the time is right, we can enforce it through secondary rather than primary legislation. So what are we doing now? It's important that we keep and sustain the campaign on a cross-party basis and make sure it's not just inside Parliament, outside Parliament. It's about how a national Parliament can work with colleagues in the European Parliament as well. We're working with the business community, and we're going to hear from Telefonica today. There are a number of businesses out there who I believe who are ready to do this on a voluntary basis, and that's something we should support. My concern about the European Commission's proposal is it doesn't go far enough to include those many developing countries around the world who deserve to get a better tax share. I'll leave this with you. If those countries actually got what tax they are due, it would dwarf international aid by a mile. Politically, I haven't found it hard to unite views from the left and right. I think it is about seeing about tax transparency. It's also about protecting those small and medium-sized businesses who cannot have the advantage of the big corporates. And finally, I would say this. My constituents, your constituents, may not know all the details about how companies shift their profits, but they can see unfairness for what it is. And this is an opportunity for all of us as progressives to speak for them and I look forward to working with you to achieve what is only fair and just.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. And exactly on the 5 minutes. No, thank you so much for all the work that you're doing. And now we go to our next speaker, which is Achim Poss, and he is Head of International Cooperation and Tax Administration Division at the OECD, where there has also been a lot of discussions about country-by-country reporting. So, Achim, over to you.
Thank you. I hope that my complicated title doesn't take up part of the 5 minutes that I have. I probably should be speaking German because that reduces the number. Say it again. Thank you. Absolutely. Already, and I haven't even started. A couple of points before I do my 5 minutes, I get my sign. One, thank you for inviting me. You will hear that we're somewhat less enthusiastic perhaps on this, but it's very important that we hear, so it's very good, very much appreciated that, you know, we hear these different voices. I think 2 points on the introduction, just to understand the introduction here also, is one, we very much buy into the tax transparency agenda. I think some of you have already spoken about all the tax transparency work that we have done and that we continue to do, where the civil society and all of you play an extremely important role. We wouldn't have gotten there anyway, where we've gotten to at the OECD and globally with a lot of these. And this cuts across the tax transparency agenda, whether it's country-by-country reporting, whether it's on the Panama Papers, whether it's automatic exchange of information. A lot of these topics have been brought to the attention. So that perhaps as an introduction, because I will put in some words of caution. And the other point before I go into detail, I think in this discussion, we all, whether it's on all sides of this, I think we need to be very reasonable in terms of the arguments and the debate that we have. Europe is the home of reason. And so I don't think we should be characterizing anybody who opposes public CBC as somebody who's trying to hide tax cheats or avoiders. I think we should also not necessarily bashing business because they're using tax incentives that some of the governments have introduced. I think, that is probably the right. There's a tax policy discussion, which we need to have, and BEPS tries to have. But it's also something that tax policy people need to do, parliamentarians need to do, and we have something to do here. And finally, I think the same is also true for some of the other voices that we hear at OECD. The civil society is stupid. People don't understand this information. You couldn't possibly do this. I think that's equally nonsense. And so I think that's how we need to frame the discussion. Now, let me make a couple of points, and these slides, they are background, just why in the OECD, where we now have a system of country-by-country reporting and exchange, it is not public understood as to the public on the website. It is to all the tax administrations in the world. So it does create a lot of transparency, but it doesn't create the sort of transparency that we're talking about here today. And maybe just some brief points why it is that the OECD is how it's been designed and how we've been asked something that is not public. And the concerns that you might have in making it public, but also recognizing that the OECD project is a tax project. You might have wider interests, and so if individual countries decide to go for public, if Europe decides to go for public, it is Europe's right to do that. I think it's very clear that we frame the discussion. So one, when we were asked to design the CBC template, which is the one that is now being used essentially in the European directive, the task that we have been given from our masters is design something that would be used by tax administration. That's what we designed. I sometimes use the example, there is the master file, the local file, and the CBC, and I have 2.5 minutes left. And so we created this for tax administrations. We had the tax administrations in mind. Sometimes I use the example, it's the three rings, like you have in the fairy tales. You kind of need the three rings to understand what's inside. There is a risk that if you pick one piece, not the master file, not the local file, and the others, that you might not, and not because you're stupid, but simply because you have less information, and not in the context that it was designed, you may be jumping to conclusions based on that somewhat limited information that you have. That is a risk. When we go through this and we work with tax administration, what does this template actually mean? It looks simple, but it's actually pretty complicated. Revenue is a number where you have aggregation and not consolidation. There's different accounting standards. I'm not going to give you all the details. I can do this way beyond my 5 minutes. I think that's one thing, and once you get to partnerships, it gets even more complicated. The second point, and this was really the focus of the discussion, it wasn't so much a discussion of keeping this out of the hands of the public. The concern was avoiding double taxation. Once you put this out, what are the restrictions in other countries that may just use the template as a result of which there might be double tax? In fact, there were a number of European countries that argued we should only be exchanging this when we have arbitration, so we can ensure at the end of the day there is no double tax. So that was the point. There may be commercially sensitive information in there, maybe not that frequently, but some have single projects that may be a PE, there may be some margins in new markets, there's joint ventures. So there's a couple of things where business has told us, business will tell you, and you've probably heard it. The last point, and this is where I'm going to use the slides, and you've seen the slides, perhaps the first slide, what is happening outside Europe? Well, luckily, also a lot. This is the number of countries that have now joined, and this coming to your point about the developing countries, which is a very important point. This is the map of those countries that have joined this project. This also shows you the countries that will be receiving the CBC reports into their tax administration, and we're working with the IMF, with the UN, through the international platform to help and build capacity in the tax administration so they can actually get their fair share of taxes and have the capacity to do it. And the point here, and this is my last slide, perhaps if you flip through, it's a minimum standard, everybody has to do it, I've got 30 seconds left. This is how many countries have already signed the actual exchange, and we hope to get soon, and we will in January, to many more countries. Now again, this is exchanging it through treaties, it's exchanging it on that basis. We are looking to review whether this has worked in 2020. Now, you've said about quickly and well, I think that's the challenge. There is a question whether what might happen in Europe, if it does happen, puts into question the global deal. It's a question, I'm not trying to answer it, and certainly not in 15 seconds. It's a different deal. But there's also a question, with all the questions that you raise about what's the threshold, we're going to look at the threshold, whether it should be disinformation, other information, whether you think about we do a first step, and then you think about doing a second step. I leave that thought with you, and I'm probably just about at the end.
Thank you very much, Achim. And I can confirm the first rules that Achim outlined. So no one is allowed to call each other tax cheats or say that civil society is stupid. So we should all stick to that, I agree. Speaking of civil society that absolutely isn't stupid, we now go to Daria Sebowska, who is from the organization IGO in Poland, where she is an advocacy and campaign officer. Welcome, Daria.
Hello. Thank you, first of all, for inviting me here. I guess I have to speak English because I can't see the Polish translators, so I will try. And, I would like to talk about why do we need a public CBCR from the civil society point of view and from actually kind of Central and Eastern Europe countries' perspective. Public information about what corporations pay in taxes for us, for civil society, also means transparency. It will serve citizens, states, and small and medium enterprises. Well, we need it because it's 2016, it's 21st century, it's not the beginning of the 20th century when the global tax system emerged. Looking from this matter from CE perspective, well, let me talk about Poland. Poland, according to the estimations, loses around 10 billion euros yearly due to tax avoidance, which is legal. And 2.5 billion euros is due to transfer pricing only. And why do we need the public CBCR? Because these are only estimations. Yes, it's a lot. For Poland, for 10 billion is really a lot. If you compare it with the 70 billion in a European Union, which has 28 members, and one country is losing only 10 billion, it's a lot. So that's why we need we don't want anymore to base our calculations on estimations or LuxLeaks scandals or other scandals. We need proper data. Public data that can be looked at. We also, as a civic society, my organization, we asked many times Ministry of Finance if they have the calculations, if the tax administration has the calculations, how much does Poland lose due to tax avoidance? We never got the numbers, so they don't know. The clue, I guess, here is that information, yes, the information is power, and that's why we know it, everybody knows it. That's why some people, some environments, some institutions don't want the information to go public, which is obvious. I think it's a shame that governments in Central and Eastern Europe are taking part in the race to the bottom, actually, because if you look at it, all those countries, they are trying to attract investors by losing, lowering the corporate income taxes, by giving more and more incentives. And this is not the way it should work. And although Poland, for example, sorry, I'm all the time speaking about Poland, although Poland is working on closing the loopholes and tightening the system, it's not going to work because there are still tax havens. There's no cooperation in European Union, and other countries are excluded from taking the decisions on global tax system. And it's here not only CE countries, yeah, although Poland is big and still doesn't have a major voice in European Union, but I'm also talking here about the developing countries, yes, countries in the global south. So that's why I think it should be public, and I guess I'm going to stop here. I'm not going to take any longer voice. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Daria. And the coffee's on its way, so in order to earn it, this is your chance to ask questions. Yes, we have a gentleman in the back. Please introduce yourself, Mr. Gambini.
Thank you. So Antonio Gambini from CNCD 111111, the Belgian French-speaking coalition of development organizations. And we are talking about a proposal for having more transparency in terms of tax contributions by multinationals. I would like to ask questions about how does that is coherent with the directive on trade secrets that was approved by the Parliament and the Council, which, at least according to the tribunal in Luxembourg, does not protect whistleblowers such as Antoine Deltour, who have been condemned for violation of trade secrets. Okay, it was not violation of the trade secret as expressed by the directive, but the tribunal did find that the trade secrets directive would not, if it was in force, protect Mr. Deltour from this accusation. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Gambini. I think we'll collect a few more questions before we go back to the panel. And here comes the coffee. Yes, please.
Catherine Fiore, EU reporter. I would like to ask a question to the OECD representative, because Caroline Flint has referred to the derisory sum that Google was charged. And we know that it was derisory, partly, at least in part, because Italy, for example, fined them, made them pay a good deal more. And you're, by only making this information available to tax administrations, it shows what faith you have in tax administrations. What the Google case in the UK demonstrates is that tax administrations can come under a lot of political pressure, depending on who they are. And so there's a really strong need for this information to be made more widely available so that either investigative journalists or organisations like Tax Justice Network can really look into the figures and assess whether the tax administrations have got a good deal. What's your response to that? Thanks.
Thank you very much. Do we have a final question before we go to the panel? Okay, great. Evelyn has a question.
Danke schön. Ich nehme gleich die Gelegenheit wahr, um ebenfalls Herrn Gross eine Frage zu stellen, und zwar zum ganzen BEPS-Projekt an sich. Die OECD hat selbst in den letzten Jahren immer wieder durch Studien festgestellt, dass der Reichtum sehr konzentriert ist. Also, dass es wirklich ein Problem ist in der Welt, dass Reichtum so konzentriert ist. So, und jetzt sehen wir bei all diesem Reichtum oftmals nicht, woher kommt das her? Woher kommt dieses ganze Vermögen her? Und ich bringe meine Frage jetzt in Beziehung eben zu dem Projekt BEPS. Ist diese beschränkte Zielsetzung der OECD, nämlich gerade Kriterien, Mittel, Wege, Instrumente, Methoden zu finden, dass Steuerbehörden einen entsprechenden Austausch pflegen können, reinen Pragmatismus geschuldet, also dem Pragmatismus, dass die Staaten so schwer aus der Deckung holen zu sind, einen Schritt weiter zu gehen und dementsprechend einmal als erster Schritt eben die Finanzbehörden den entsprechenden Austausch haben sollten, oder soll das schon mehr oder weniger das Ende der Fahnenstange sein? Also wären Sie dann bereit, sich schon damit zufrieden damit schon zufrieden zu sein? Wir aus unserer Erfahrung im Europäischen Parlament stellen immer nur fest, erst dann, wenn es entsprechende Leaks-Seiten gibt, also wenn wir Panama Papers haben und die Whistleblower, LuxLeaks und so weiter, SwissLeaks und alles, was wir gesehen haben, einer Öffentlichkeit einmal vorführen, was alles an unmöglichen, schrecklichen Dingen passiert, erst dann kommt die Reaktion der Gesetzgeber, der Öffentlichkeit, auch von Regierungen letztlich. Und daher diese konkrete Frage an Sie, ob das denn schon grundsätzlich ausreichend sein kann oder nur politische Bescheidenheit ist.
All right, before we go back to Mr. Posse, first Sergio for a question, or for an answer to the question from Mr. Antonio Gambini.
Le cose non stanno esattamente come lei diceva. Nella direttiva sui segreti commerciali è prevista l'esclusione dagli obblighi, dai vincoli che lì sono indicati, dei giornalisti. E dunque il cronista che è oggi sotto processo per quanto riguarda lo scandalo LuxLeaks, da quella direttiva non è in alcun modo né interessato né ancor meno penalizzato. Il tema è stato lungamente discusso per evitare il rischio che lei paventava. Abbiamo utilizzato anche la discussione alla quale mi riferisco per ottenere da parte della Commissione una proposta specifica in difesa del whistleblower, della quale discuteremo, anzi è già stata assegnata alla Commissione giuridica e della quale comincerà la discussione tra breve, qui presente la collega che se ne occupa direttamente. Ora, io credo che il tema dell'informazione sia un tema molto importante, che le persone che nell'interesse della loro comunità si sono assunte dei rischi e si sono esposte debbano essere assolutamente difese. Non avremmo mai accettato una conclusione nella direttiva sui segreti commerciali se ci fosse stato qualche elemento di ingerenza indebita da un lato e negativa dall'altro. Dunque la voglio rassicurare. L'argomento ci è ben chiaro ed è un tema al quale dedicheremo anche una parte importante del lavoro nei prossimi mesi.
Thank you very much. And Achim, I think it's good we got you some coffee because there was a lot of questions for you.
Thanks very much. Not in the afternoon. I'm already hyperactive, so I cut down on a coffee. On the two questions, and hold up if I go beyond my 2.5 minutes in answering.
Your question perhaps first, and then also coming to your question, both in English or perhaps in German, but I guess that doesn't make a difference here. One, I am not privy to any details of what settlement with any particular taxpayer is in HMRC, neither are you. So we at OECD have also no view. This is taxpayer confidentiality, and what was settled or not as compared to Italy, I don't know. I think just to explain what we're doing, and that will help shed a light, I guess, in answering the question, is in the world that we have now agreed and is being implemented also in Europe through a directive that's already approved. Let's not forget, there's a lot of progress. I tend to be the glasses half full person rather than half empty, but there is tremendous change that is happening because of all the things that you've worked on, that we've worked on, and that are happening from where we were. Now, whether it's enough or not enough, you know, the jury is out. But on CBC, so if you are a multinational enterprise today, and yes, it's a threshold of 750, and yes, we've said in 2020 we also need to look at the threshold, and certainly the company you name is way beyond that, then you will need to send the CBC, and that's your CBC for the global company, not the one for the country, not the one in your instance for the UK, but for every single operation to every single tax administration where you have a branch, a subsidiary, where you have a taxable presence. So if you operate in 120 countries, all of the global information, and not just a country-by-country file, but a new master file, a new local file, any ability to ask questions, will be with all these tax administrations. One of the things that sometimes overlooked, that this is not new in the sense that this report is new, it's also that all the subsidiary will have the global picture. So that means if you operate in 120 countries, there will be at least 120 auditors in different countries looking at different things. And that already is a big step in transparency. I think that we need to just see that. So that happens. And where we sit at the OECD, this was a project to address taxation. Of course, it rests on the assumption that a tax administration is a responsible organization that is in charge of assessing the taxes. If there is anyone that has a particular issue with its tax administration, there's government's arrangements that you can have individually. So I think what we're doing here in setting the rules and putting the system in place, and this is the segue into your question, I think, is a huge step from where we are. We also hear that companies already are considering their CBC and what it means, and that change is happening. Because you know that this will go to 140 very different tax administrations in developing countries, in European countries, in Asia, and they're all going to see the same thing. And we're working with those tax administrations also to figure out how do you make the best sense of it. And I guess you're nodding because it's not that easy to figure this out, but there's a lot of work still need to be done in the practical implementation. And then I guess we come back in 2020 and look at how this has worked, what it's done. We would love to do it even quicker, but it's just, you know, as you know, you need to enact legislation, you need to translate legislation, companies need some time, they need to put it together, and then it needs to get exchanged. In terms of the question, where do we go, and sind wir so bescheiden? sorry for the German. I think there is really two projects here, and when the narrative blends together, then it sometimes just blends. There is a big step in transparency that we took with the global exchange of financial account information, largely on individuals. And that's gone from nowhere, also because of civil society, admittedly, thank you, to quite something in a record period of time, and of course also because of number of scandals. You're absolutely right. Because ultimately, we at OECD, we can write a lot of papers, and we write a lot of papers, but they remain papers unless the member countries actually do it. So we can have loads of clever ideas, and there's a lot of people, certainly not just at OECD, hopefully also at OECD, that have clever ideas. But the BEPS plan isn't a paper that some of my colleagues wrote in a little room. It's something that all the governments agreed, committed to do, and have public accountability to the G20, where we write the report. That's driven the change. That's gotten us bank secrecy, all of that driver. We could have written a lot of reports, and we did that 15 years ago. So I think there is a huge amount of change. Does it stop here? I don't think it does. But I think there is exchange of bank account information. It's coming in 2017. It's the first time you're going to get it with 54 countries. You're going to get it with another 101 in 2018. That is huge. Tax administrations are now gearing up. What do you do with this? If you open a bank account in the future, you will know that this tax amount is going to be reported to your home jurisdiction, so you probably don't even do it. So that's not the end, but it's a big step forward. There's more you can do. There's a balance also. There's data protection concerns where you also have committees. So we need to be also balanced and not overshoot and look at the costs and the compliance and the benefits and balance it out. And the same also applies for CBC. So I think what we're trying to do, and this is also where you see it, the map, for where business is, for instance, we need to engage with a lot of countries. You can move your account from one place to another in a second. So if you restrict ourselves to Europe, if we even restrict ourselves just to the traditional OECD, we will not solve it. That is why we need to go so broad, so that where business is and where bank accounts can go, we are with those rules, so we get it. So I don't think it's humble. We could have probably done more, but, you know, that discussion maybe we can have over coffee.
Yes. Speaking of coffee, you are allowed to serve yourselves even if you haven't asked a question, but please do have a think about whether you have a question to ask. And meanwhile, we go to Carolyn Flynn for a comment.
I think, to be fair to Achim, I mean, he's right. He's not a politician. He's there to try and, we have a phrase in English called, it's like trying to herd cats. Ultimately, you know, part of this is, you know, what politicians working with civil society, but also, you know, making sure we're in touch with ordinary people who don't spend their days thinking about this. But every now and again, they hear about the people like Google and Facebook and others getting away with it, and it really makes them angry. I do think that it is going to be interesting next year when we will start to have some real information about the data that's been provided to countries. And as you said, Achim, we're talking about a pretty huge scope of countries that are going to be affected by this. It's going to be really important. I know already that, you know, campaigning in of itself, we're not there yet, does have an impact. I mean, it's interesting that in the British newspaper today, Google has confirmed that it's going ahead with its headquarters in London. And that was an interesting discussion we had in February this year, because we said, so your headquarters is going to be in London, but most of your profits come out of Dublin. And the chief guy from Google Europe said, well, we're in Dublin because more people speak more languages in Dublin. And we said, what, compared to London? And he went, we think so. And we went, yeah, right. Okay. But let's look at Facebook already. So Facebook in UK has already in this last year announced a change to its economic activity profile. And as a result of that, it has skewed the balance, which was very much going through Dublin, to more of it being invoiced in the UK. And as a result of that, they've made it very clear, and I'm sure this is not because it's out of the goodness of their heart, but I think because they are realising there is massive reputational damage to them as a brand if they are not seen to be doing the right thing by the countries that they are operating in. So, you know, this is not a zero-sum game here. This is about that constant pressure, making the argument, using the evidence, working with those people who are prepared to do the right thing, criticising when it's necessary, but praising on the other hand as well. But I do believe that ultimately we may look back in 15, 20 years' time and say, what was all the fuss about transparency? But, you know, we are making progress and the cup's half full.
Excellent. All right. Now it's back to you. Any other questions? Yes, there's one in the back and this one over here. Please introduce yourself.
Hi, can you hear me? Okay, so my name is Henry Makkonen. I'm working for Financial Transparency Coalition. And I have a question for Mr. Pras, because you mentioned in your introduction that the template that the Commission now proposed for the public country-by-country reporting is essentially based in the same template that you've been talking, that you designed in the OECD for BEPS. But I would think that quite many people in this building would argue that it has a closer resemblance to actually the template that the EU agreed for the banks, for bank for the public country-by-country reporting for the banks. And the reason why the Parliament was pushing for this public country-by-country reporting for the banks was that they are better able to have these discussions about tax policies, that you said that it's important to have these discussions about tax policies in different countries so that we know what kind of tax policies are good for economy and so on, and which tax policies actually lead to companies paying less taxes in some jurisdictions than others. But if we don't have this public CBCR for all the companies, how can this House, how can the Parliament talk about then those tax policies?
Great, thank you. More questions are welcome. And meanwhile, we go back to Mr. Gambini. I will give preference to people who haven't asked a question before, but if you don't raise your hand, Antonio will be speaking the rest of the day.
C'est très certainement un risque. Je vais parler en français, excusez-moi. Donc, première question pour Monsieur Pross. Donc, je suis un peu surpris que vous avez évoqué la question du secret des affaires comme un des arguments pour justifier la non-publication des données, parce que je lis la littérature de l'OCDE avec attention, et le commentaire officiel de l'OCDE à l'article 26 de la Convention mondiale de l'OCDE, eh bien, dit justement le contraire. Je cite, « Les informations financières, y compris les livres et documents comptables, ne constituent pas, de par leur nature, un secret commercial, industriel ou autre. » Et donc, voilà, j'aimerais bien que l'OCDE puisse avoir une position un peu cohérente sur la question. Ça ne me semble pas être le cas à ce stade-ci. En réponse à l'observation du député M. Cofferati, que je remercie, juste une petite clarification. En effet, le journaliste Édouard Perrin a été acquitté de ses accusations dans le cadre de l'affaire LuxLeaks par le tribunal de Luxembourg. C'est une bonne chose. Et effectivement, la protection des journalistes dans la directive secret des affaires est assez solide. Par contre, le whistleblower, le lanceur d'alerte Antoine Deltour, lui a bien et bien été condamné à une peine de prison par le tribunal de Luxembourg. Et je pense que ça peut s'expliquer, y compris par rapport à la directive sur le secret des affaires, qui prévoit, dans l'exception pour lanceurs d'alerte, qu'il doit y avoir une faute, un acte répréhensible ou une activité illégale. Or, comme nous le savons, l'optimisation fiscale des multinationales est très souvent, n'est pas une faute, n'est pas un acte répréhensible et n'est pas une activité illégale. Merci.
All right. If there are no further questions, I guess we're going back to you, Achim.
Sorry. Three quick points. I think one, which links to our previous discussion, transparency is a key element on changing and improving the global tax agenda. But of course, if we stopped there, we still wouldn't quite get there, because we would know where all the profits are, but maybe they're rightly there, and that's why it's so important that we actually changed the rules as well, which is a big part of BEPS. And, you know, whether this is on commissionaire, whether this is on transfer pricing, so you can't just book the profits despite the fact that the value creation actually isn't happening, that's also driving some of the behavior. So while transparency is key, it's really not the only one. On your question, fundamentally, I think the question you raise is a larger question, which is a question about, should you have tax confidentiality? First of all, as a domestic question. We know that a number of countries, including OECD member countries, publish tax returns of their individuals on their website. We sometimes bring these countries together, and some countries from other parts of the world think that's completely crazy, because in their culture, that's not anything anybody's ever contemplated. But it feels very natural in a number of the Nordic countries. So your question is really a question which isn't a part of the CBC question, but a larger question of what sort of tax confidentiality, perhaps for corporate taxpayers, would you like to have? I think that's a very legitimate question that you can have, and it's a question that has been answered differently. I'm not sure that we would be ready of answering this question, you know, globally for all of us. In terms of is it the same as this? Maybe you come up. I mean, we've, of course, compared it. It looks pretty much like the OECD, but, you know, we can debate this. It's the same minus four columns. And lastly, on your question about the OECD and the coherence, of course the OECD is coherent. Like, it's the OECD. It's in the name. It's probably the C in OECD. No, but seriously, What I said and what has been represented, and I think the words chosen, were commercially sensitive information. So it's a question. It's a question for debate. It's not a legal restriction. So what we have heard from businesses is there are instances where legitimate commercially sensitive information may be included in the CBC file. That can happen. I can give you some examples of what that might be. And then I think that's important to take into account in making the decision. Because you would be making it public, so it's not Article 26, because you're not discussing about exchanging it here, so 26 doesn't even come in when you're talking public.
Thank you. I think we will have time for one last more question before our keynote speaker, Dombrovskis, arrives. So just to put that out there, and before we do that, I think I have one comment from Evelyn and one from Sergio.
Ich antworte auf die Frage zu den Whistleblowern in aller Geschwindigkeit. Kollege Cofferati hat das schon gesagt, aber dazu Folgendes. Die Richtlinie über die Trade Secrets, also die Betriebsgeschäftsgeheimnisse, enthält einen sektoralen Whistleblower-Schutz, also der Ausnahme von Journalisten, Journalistinnen im Zuge der Tätigkeit in Bezug auf die Geschäftsgeheimnisse und dann noch erstmals Whistleblower-Schutz, aber wie gesagt immer beschränkt auf Geschäftsgeheimnisse bezüglich, und jetzt gilt es ja sorgfältig zu lesen, bezüglich illegalem Verhalten, aber nicht nur illegalem Verhalten, sondern auch illegitimem Verhalten. Es ist ausdrücklich festgehalten, dass auch Fehlverhalten, das nicht illegal ist, sondern eben illegitim ist, entsprechend vom Schutz erfasst wird. Es hat im Zuge der Abstimmung heftige Debatten gegeben, denn hier gilt es, wenn es um die Übersetzung gilt, besonders sorgfältig zu sein. Und mir ist bekannt, dass es in der französischen Version offensichtlich diesbezüglich Schwierigkeiten gegeben hat, weil es natürlich sehr, sehr wichtig ist, dass es für Richter bzw. alle Rechtsanwender anschließend sichergestellt ist, welches Wording gewählt wird. Ich kenne die Judikatur in Deutschland, die Judikatur in Österreich. Da ist es aufgrund der Übersetzung, der Formulierung klar, nochmals, dass auch Fehlverhalten, ja, also nicht nur strafrechtlich Relevantes, sondern eben im weitesten Sinne unmoralisches Verhalten, entsprechend davon abgedeckt ist. Und um es quasi abzukürzen jetzt und die Schlussfolgerung zu ziehen, wäre die Richtlinie zum gegebenen Zeitpunkt nicht nur beschlossen, sondern auch schon umgesetzt gewesen, dann wäre ein solches Fehlurteil, und das betone ich, das ist ein Fehlurteil, gegenüber Herrn Deltour nicht möglich gewesen.
Quick comment also from Sergio.
Una cosa brevissima, perché per quanto riguarda i whistleblower adesso ha completato il ragionamento Evelyn con grande precisione. No, è per dire che avremo insieme un nuovo compito se, come spero, la definizione della rendicontazione paese per paese proseguirà. Noi abbiamo discusso negli anni passati e approvato norme che riguardano la responsabilità sociale d'impresa. Faccio notare che oggi l'impianto della responsabilità sociale è prevalentemente volontario. In discussione è la reputazione dell'impresa, che se denuncia comportamenti difformi da quelli reali, perde la sua immagine. Con delle norme vincolanti per quanto concerne i temi di quali stiamo parlando, bisognerà rivedere anche tutta la normativa relativa alla responsabilità sociale, perché la volontarietà non reggerebbe più in quel caso, e dunque il Parlamento e la Commissione avranno molto lavoro altrettanto delicato da fare.
All right, I see that our keynote speaker has now arrived. If it's okay with the Vice President, I'll just round up with one last question and the closing remarks from the panel. So we have MEP Virginie Rossier with a question or a comment.
J'avais une question et une remarque. La première question, c'était pour prolonger la question de d'Evelyn Regner sur la finalité qu'on poursuit au travers du reporting pays par pays. Il y a bien sûr la question de la coopération des autorités fiscales, mais au-delà de ça, la question des outils pour la délibération publique, ça a été largement abordé, et aussi la question de la responsabilité vis-à-vis de pays tiers, particulièrement lorsque l'évasion fiscale a pour victime les populations et les pays en voie de développement, pour lesquels, au contraire, on devrait avoir un souci particulier pour ce que les multinationales s'acquittent de dépenses. Et donc, en ça, je faisais aussi écho à l'intervention de Mme Zebrowska. Et donc, j'aurais voulu avoir un peu la position de ces deux là-dessus. Quelles ont exactement, j'entends bien qu'on est sur des mesures techniques, mais comment est-ce qu'on peut aborder ces différentes finalités? Et l'autre objet, c'était pour avoir suivi de près la question de la traduction sur la directive secret des affaires, pour compléter là aussi ce que disait Evelyne. On a beaucoup débattu sur la version française. En anglais, le terme est wrongdoing. Donc clairement, notre objectif était d'introduire dans la directive secret des affaires une protection des lanceurs d'alerte, y compris lorsque les actes dénoncés sont des actes légaux, mais contraire à l'intérêt général, et c'est bien la suite de la définition, si vous la lisez, c'est bien acte répréhensible, faute, ou acte répréhensible contraire à l'intérêt général, donc c'est bien l'objet, et par ailleurs, nous avons demandé, et nous travaillons à un cadre général de protection des lanceurs d'alerte, sur lequel j'aurai le plaisir d'être rapporteur en commission des affaires juridiques, donc j'aurai à cœur de travailler, bien entendu, avec l'ensemble des parties prenantes sur le sujet.
Thank you very much. We now go back to the panel for quick closing remarks, because we also need to pass over to our keynote speaker. Daria, would you like to start?
Thank you. I just wanted to make two comments to what Mr. Achim Pross said. Well, I think that making reports public is would confirm that civil society is taken seriously, actually, because you said that civil society is not stupid, yes, and that's why we need to make it public, because it actually would help tax administration that is limited in their capacity and manpower to extract the data, to find out what we are really looking for. We can't believe that all of these employees of the tax administration can do all the jobs. So let's have a faith in civic society and let's give them access to the information, just like, I don't know, we have Aarhus Convention and so on. And the other comment would be on Global South countries that are in the BEPS initiative. Well, the truth is that when they enter the BEPS, they have to already accept the already set model. They don't have any and they can't take any decisions or change it in any way. So and the thing is that it is said that they will get a tax information exchange between tax authorities. The problem is that it's actually not true, because it's not in the agreement, and well, we hear from a lot of governments that they are not willing to exchange information, tax information, with the countries in the Global South.
Thank you very much. And Carolyn Flint with
Well, thanks very much. Look, I think it's what's important is that clearly the EU, the UK is in an interesting position given our vote on the 23rd of June. But I have it on good authority that UK ministers will continue to work with their counterparts in the European Parliament on this area. So I think what's important here as well is that whatever you're doing at an EU level, which is important, of course it is, and we'll keep an eye on what our government ministers are saying they will do or not saying what they will do. But I think it's really important to remember that there is huge scope for what happens in your national parliaments as well. And that shouldn't be lost in this, but also the campaigning outside of our political institutions. I think we're living through interesting times where the public have lost a lot of trust in institutions, whether they are political or financial. And this is one of those areas where, for those of us involved in politics, particularly if you like the more mainstream traditional political parties, we have to counter the voices of those who like to support, if you like, political populism in giving simple answers to very difficult problems and getting a hearing more than some of us within our sister parties across the Europe and beyond. But I do believe that transparency is absolutely key to this. And just to end on one other point, if I may, we currently have a criminal finances bill going through the UK Parliament. And with my colleagues like Margaret Hodge, we're addressing a couple of particular issues. One is unexplained wealth orders, which only apply to politically exposed persons outside the EEA. We will be amending the legislation and trying to get it passed to include within the EEA as well. But also, we'll be attempting to push our UK government further on public registers of beneficial ownership in our overseas territories and crown dependencies, because we recognise that the UK, because of our interesting history, has a lot of responsibility for some of these tax havens around the world.
All right, Achim, this is a difficult one because we literally have 35 seconds left, but please, closing remarks from you.
35 seconds without the microphone working. On the public, I think I've made the points before. I don't need to rehash them. I think you've heard, like, we design something for a specific context, and, you know, there's some other issues that I raised, but for your consideration. Maybe 20 seconds on the developing countries. There is a huge outreach to developing countries. It is not true that they will not influence. They will sit around the table, and there's a number of items that they get to decide. You also need to be realistic. We're working with them of building capacity. They're coming. There's a lot of work. And it's not just the OECD. It's the IMF. It's the UN. It's the international organizations coming together with regional organizations such as ATAF. Sometimes we also hear things here that we don't hear in Africa. And so we like to listen to what the people also on the ground say. They also have some other issues, whether it's on incentives, whether it's tax holidays. There's a lot of work that's going on. They will receive the CBC so that they can get the fair share of the taxes. They need to build the capacity. We're also doing with them pilot work so they can get automatic exchange of information and some of those people that hide the accounts in some of our own countries here, and that's equally important. So there's a lot of work going on. You're more than welcome to come to the OECD, see how this all works. I'm happy to invite you anytime.
Great. I hope it means we're all invited to the OECD if you want to come. And if there are no further closing remarks from any of the MEPs, then I'm extremely happy to welcome Vice President Dombrovskis from the European Commission, who is in charge of a number of issues, including the euro, social dialogue, financial stability, financial services, and the capital market union. So thank you so much for joining us here today.
Honorable colleagues, first of all, thank you for this invitation to discuss with you Europe's recent efforts in corporate tax transparency. And it's easy to see the importance of the issue. Our governments miss out an estimated 50 to 70 billion euros in revenue each year due to the corporate tax avoidance. And in view of the fiscal efforts they are making and the investment demanded by our companies, these amounts are unacceptably high. So naturally, ever since recent leaks have once again underlined the magnitude of the problem, calls for action have gained force. European Parliament has been vocal and active in finding the right answer to this problem. And I would like to thank also the S&D group for its constructive contribution to this work. As you know, the European Commission made fair taxation one of its priorities and have put forward a number of measures to make sure that companies pay their fair share of taxes in the country where their actual economic activity is taking place and to tackle tax evasion. Information is key. Tax transparency is one of the best tools we have. Last April, the Commission proposed that the biggest multinational companies operating in Europe, whatever their nationality or sector, provide the public with a report disclosing how much corporate tax is paid on a country-by-country basis. Europe is the first jurisdiction to propose this in the world. This proposal fits into our broader agenda on tax fairness. On the policy side, I have, together with Commissioner Moscovici, taken forward an ambitious legislative program on which we have been able to deliver on a record time. We have made substantial progress in terms of binding new rules on tax transparency, fair taxation agreements, and in tackling the loopholes that allow tax avoidance and profit shifting to take place. Member States have already signed up to the landmark agreements, including our anti-tax avoidance package last summer. Thanks to our proposal, Member States' tax authorities will next start automatically exchanging information on tax rulings. Last month, we relaunched proposals for a common consolidated corporate tax base. This corporate tax reform will counteract some of the most damaging tax avoidance schemes used by multinationals in the EU, providing a holistic solution to the problems of aggressive tax planning. Led by my colleague Commissioner Vestager, Commission has clamped down on a state aid in the form of selective tax advantages. And Commissioner Jourova this summer tabled an ambitious proposals regarding the access by tax authorities to anti-money laundering information, which may also be relevant for tax purposes. We are now also looking into the role of that some tax advisors and financial intermediaries play in facilitating tax evasion and how to create effective disincentives. Advice on harmful tax practices should not be a form of legitimate business. Efforts are not limited to European Union only. We are also witnessing an unprecedented global move to fight base erosion and profit shifting. European Union can take pride in its decisive contribution to the G20 agenda, and we praise the OECD for its BEPS action plan. We have turned many of the key BEPS actions into the hard EU law, and we have gone even further in some cases. Not so long ago, it would have been only a wishful thinking. For our proposal on country-by-country reporting, the Commission needed to assess carefully the impact, lean on the knowledge and expertise of companies and stakeholders through a public consultation, and find the right balance as regards country-by-country reporting. There had to be a clear demonstration that public tax transparency would add real value. And we believe it does. Greater transparency would definitely help restore public trust in our tax systems. It helps to assess whether tax laws achieve their goals in the EU and whether there are loopholes that should be closed. Public tax transparency can be beneficial for companies as well, notably by creating more level playing field for our SMEs. It has been estimated that in countries with high income taxes, big multinationals are paying up to 30% less taxes than SMEs. Smaller companies which are not able to shift their profits around or cannot afford clever tax advice are at competitive disadvantage to larger multinational companies. And obviously, if some companies pay less tax, others will have to pay more, and it trickles down to ordinary citizens as well. So we believe that multinationals also stand to benefit. By being transparent about the taxes they pay, multinationals will strengthen trust with the society, but not least also with their investors. with a scope that would cover companies with a global turnover over 750 billion euros, it would cover at least 6,000 groups that account for 90% of global revenues of multinational companies. If these companies that have the capacity to engage in aggressive, it's these companies that have the capacity to engage in aggressive tax planning. And the threshold means that we don't target smaller companies, and it's consistent with the global approach agreed by the G20 leaders based on an OECD plan. A level playing field is critical in my view because we want also to address the problem of some non-European multinational companies operating profitably in a single market and paying disproportionately little tax in EU countries. This is why the rules would apply to European and non-European multinationals alike as soon as they do sufficient business in Europe. So the Commission proposal is very ambitious in this regard. The information to be disclosed by multinational companies should be limited to what is necessary to effective public scrutiny and should not give rise to disproportionate risks to companies. We found that the public information need not to be as detailed and complete as what tax authorities will get. It should nevertheless be reported member state by member state and aggregated elsewhere. Nevertheless, as fraud operates internationally, tax transparency cannot have boundaries. This is why Commission has been pushing for a much tougher stance against tax havens, starting with an EU blacklist of problematic third countries. We believe that if taxes are paid outside the EU in the jurisdictions that do not abide by international tax governance standards, multinationals should publish the same detailed information in these jurisdictions, meaning country-by-country reporting for tax havens. So there could be a question why we didn't go for a fully detailed country-by-country reporting regarding operations outside the EU. Our impact assessment showed that this was not wholly necessary to get a view on companies' tax affairs, and that unless companies outside Europe publish similar information, we would be putting European companies at a disadvantage. Furthermore, it's difficult to require non-EU companies to provide information regarding their non-EU operations if we have no good basis for that. We believe that there is a good reason to ask for that information when there is a sufficient link between the EU entities of a group and those in a tax haven that entail serious suspicion of tax evasion at the expense of the EU. Well, I also have to mention the recent opinion of the Council Legal Service. It challenges the freedom of establishment, Article 50 of the treaty, as a legal basis for public country-by-country reporting. It's now for member states and presidency to take this forward, but I would like to stress that we stand firmly behind our proposal, which was also supported by Commission's legal service, that using Article 50 and involving Parliament is legally sound. Ladies and gentlemen, to conclude, Europe is bringing about a paradigm shift in the EU taxation, one that will make it more transparent, more efficient, and more business-friendly. Tax transparency is a simple, proportionate way to increase accountability. Fair and effective taxation goes hand in hand with growth and economic sustainability, so it must remain a priority. The proposal we made in April strikes the right balance. It provides a high degree of public transparency on corporate tax practices. The proposal is largely aligned with the proposal for country-by-country reporting between tax authorities, but with a narrower scope to prevent the information from being abused and to preserve competitiveness and business-sensitive information. We must continue to work together as EU to achieve such transparency, and we must continue to push our international partners to do the same. And I trust on your support to get this proposal agreed as quickly as possible. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Mr. Vice President, and I think especially in this House, there is great joy to hear that the Commission stands by its position that the legal basis is one that should guarantee the European Parliament a role in the negotiations of public country-by-country reporting, as we've seen in the past. Now, I believe we have a little bit of time for some questions from the audience, if there are any. Yes. Pavanche Perez, please.
Merci beaucoup, Monsieur le Vice-président. Effectivement, pour nous, c'est très important de vérifier que la Commission européenne maintient sa base juridique comme base pour la proposition qui a été faite. Et nous espérons que, au-delà de la Commission, suffisamment d'États membres, finalement il n'en faut pas tant que ça, hein, d'États membres partageront notre approche. Et je pense qu'un des rôles de notre famille politique, c'est aussi de veiller à ce que chacun des ministres en charge dans les différents États membres soutiennent la Commission sur la question de la base juridique. Mais vous avez beaucoup parlé de savoir comment est-ce que l'Union européenne avançait sur ces sujets par rapport à ses compétiteurs ou par rapport à ses partenaires. Et là, je pense que les échanges que nous avons eus avec Joseph Stiglitz toute la journée nous obligent à vous poser la question, parce que il nous dit beaucoup l'Europe doit prendre le lead sur ces sujets parce que, à cause de la victoire de Donald Trump aux États-Unis, pas grand chose ne se passera. Donc, en tant que vice-président, est-ce que vous voyez la possibilité, au-delà de ce que vous nous avez dit à l'instant, pour la Commission européenne, de prendre des initiatives qui mettent la pression sur nos partenaires? Parce qu'au fond, nous sommes quand même un grand marché, donc ça intéresse tout le monde, même les grandes multinationales, de venir faire des affaires en Europe et de se servir de cet intérêt qu'ont ces entreprises à venir faire des affaires en Europe pour leur imposer un peu davantage que ce que vous avez mis dans la proposition en termes de respect du CBCR. Et puis, autre question, si vous me permettez. Il se trouve que je suis plongée là dans les archives, car dans cette maison, ce débat a commencé en 2007, lorsque nous avons adopté la norme comptable IFRS 8, où un certain nombre d'ONG nous avaient alertés pour dire il faut permettre le reporting pays par pays, notamment dans les activités minières et extractives. Est-ce que, du point de vue des normes comptables et donc de l'attitude que la Commission européenne porte vis-à-vis de l'IASB, vous êtes prêt à ouvrir là aussi un front pour que la question du reporting pays par pays soit pris en compte par l'IASB?
There are no other questions at this point. Oh, yes, of course. Evelyn, please.
So, dear Commissioner, Vice President of the Commission, thank you very much for your presentation right now, for the overview, and also for the clear, firm words concerning the legal base. And the position of the Commissioner will assure that we, not only as Socialists and Democrats, will more or less push the same way in order to have a clear position on the legal base as well from the European Parliament. My question right now is on the aggregated data. The Commission's proposal is referring to full country-by-country reporting among member states, here clear criteria, and focusing on getting aggregated data from third countries. So I can understand the Commission's explanation that it's quite difficult, more or less, from third countries to demand and these data, and that it's legally quite difficult. But right now the question is as follows. Don't we open further loopholes when more or less referring to just to aggregated data and not to a full country-by-country reporting? When it's about defining just in this restricted area a list of tax havens, just referring to this CBCR reporting, isn't it very dangerous that we get member states again more or less struck because everybody among the member states is always referring to these criteria, those criteria, and isn't the danger so big that we are getting once more in a jungle of loopholes?
Mr. Vice President, you want to answer?
Okay, thank you for those questions. So on this legal base, indeed Commission sticks with Article 50 as a legal basis for proposal and of course will be in contact with the Council, with the Member States based on an analysis provided to us by the European Commission's legal service. So I cannot prejudge the outcome of those discussions, but we think that our legal basis of the proposal is solid. Then on EU-European Commission taking initiatives internationally, it must be said that the European Commission has been very active and is very active internationally in terms of G20 agenda, putting this as a point on global agenda, on pushing for and later implementing OECD initiative to fight against base erosion and profit shifting. So, and certainly Commission will continue to be active in global stage and encourage also other actors to follow suit. So you asked specific question on mining industry. Our current proposal is actually on a broad scope covering all industries, which of course includes also the mining industry. So it's IFCOM. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, but in any case, as I said, we will be advancing this agenda also internationally and will continue to do so. Then this question of aggregated data and how it will work in terms of discussions with the member states. In any case, our proposal is that then there is also a list of non-cooperative tax jurisdictions for the purposes of country-by-country reporting. Of course, it has to be EU-wide list. We already now are proposing actually EU-wide list of non-cooperative jurisdictions, and I hope at the end of the day we'll be able to have a consistent approach across those different pieces of legislation, so it shouldn't be left to the each member state to decide which legislations are tax havens and which are not. There should be EU-wide list on this. Thank you.
Great. And are there any further questions for the Vice President? Yes, in the back, please.
Catherine Fior, EU reporter. Can I just ask, on tax havens, are you going to be... you've got the list of non-cooperative jurisdictions. I mean, I don't know to what extent that's going to decide who's going to be on the blacklist. And I think it said in that document that the US was considered to be transparent, and yet we know that the US has, certainly states like Delaware, have no information about beneficial ownership of companies, things like that. Also, it excludes countries in the EU. Do we also need to look at you know, our own turf and look at what needs to do within the EU for countries that are behaving like tax havens? The other question is, of course, the Crown dependencies and overseas territories, as Caroline Flint has already mentioned, where, you know, the Panama Papers, apparently about several of the shell companies listed were registered in the British Virgin Islands, and BVI have said that they want to discuss with Prime Minister May arrangements for these areas when discussing Brexit. So I was wondering if you've got anything to say about that.
Great. So to summarize, what is the difference between a blacklist and a list of non-cooperative jurisdictions? Is the U.S. a tax haven? And can EU member states be tax havens? And what do we do about the overseas territories? That's a lot, Mr. Vice President.
Okay, indeed. Quite a few questions. First, the current blacklist which we are having is basically a compilation of national lists. There is no single EU list, so what we are having is a national list, and then if sufficient number of member states put certain jurisdiction in a blacklist, it appears in EU list. That's how it works currently, and we think that we need to change this. And the Commission already proposed to work on EU's, meaning proper EU's blacklist, and this work is already ongoing in ECOFIN, and we hope that it can be finalized by the end of the next year. And so I cannot now tell you which jurisdictions will or will not be in this list, because this will be outcome of those discussions. To be very clear, we do not have tax havens in the EU. All EU countries have to comply with tax good governance. All EU countries have to comply with exchange of information, how to apply state aid framework, meaning no selective tax advantages, and so forth, and so on and so forth. And actually, we had moved already quite a lot during the also previous years in terms of ensuring effective exchange of information on, say, people's savings incomes, later now on tax rulings, the proposal. And, of course, this work within the EU is ongoing, but I would not confuse the terminology here. Thank you.
Great. If there are no further questions, I just want to say a warm thank you, Mr. Vice President Dombrovskis, for joining us here today. It was a pleasure to hear from you. And we will now reshuffle the panel to introduce to you Team 2. While we do that, I believe we have also a video, as far as I know, with a message from a man who is called Gabriel Sugman, who is an assistant professor in economics at Berkeley and a very active participant in the discussion about inequality, including with his book, The Missing Wealth of Nations. So please enjoy the video, and we will be reshuffling a bit while you watch.
I'm Gabriel Zagman. I'm an assistant professor of economics at UC Berkeley. So country-by-country reporting is an extremely important tool to foster financial transparency. As you know, multinational companies all over the world, and that's true in the European Union too, artificially shift a big and growing fraction of their profits to zero-tax countries such as Bermuda, the Cayman Islands, and similar tax havens. The only way that we can learn about the extent of this profit shifting and the revenue implications for governments in the EU and all over the world is if we ask multinational firms to publish country-by-country data on their profits, on their sales, on their capital, on their number of employees, and so on. And this data, obviously, should be made public so that we can understand which firms are artificially shifting profits to tax havens and which firms don't. It is an extremely important goal, country-by-country reporting, but I think it's not an end in itself. You know, it's a tool that should be used, in my view, to improve the taxation of multinational companies by moving to a formulary apportionment system. So if we know the global profits of a multinational company, and if we knew where the sales of this company are made, then we could very easily apportion the global profits of multinational firms proportionally to where sales are made. So if Apple, for instance, makes, I don't know, $50 billion in profits globally and makes 10% of its sales in Germany, then we could say that 10% of Apple's global profits are taxable in Germany. That type of tax reform would address radically the problem of artificial profit shifting and of tax avoidance by multinational firms. But to achieve this, we need information in the first place. We need country-by-country data on profits, on sales, on employment, and so on. So country-by-country reporting is key. It's, a first step towards a meaningful reform of the corporate tax for the 21st century. I also think it's not enough. There are other tools that are important to foster financial transparency. It's not enough to know, though it's very important, where multinational firms produce and sell and pay taxes. We need to extend transparency beyond multinational companies. I think we need a European financial registry that would record who are the owners of European firms and who are the owners of the bonds issued by European companies, by the bonds issued by European governments. Such a financial registry would create a badly needed transparency on the distribution of wealth, on who owns the public debt of Euro area countries or European Union countries. And so in my from my perspective, both tools, country-by-country reporting and a European-wide financial registry are complementary and are concrete embodiments of the notion of financial transparency. Thank you very much.
All right. We are now ready for panel two. Unfortunately, I can't offer you to ask questions to Gabriel Zucman, but I do hope you found the video interesting. And now we will hear some further views on the issue. We're starting off with a private sector representative. We have Angel Martin, a group head of tax at Telefonica Group, and thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks to you. We'd like to thank very much the S&D and the Socialists and Democrats for this initiative. It's really exciting to be here, and I'm really proud to be here. But don't get me wrong, I'm not here to represent any type of multinationals. I'm just able to represent, and I'm not sure I can even do so, my company. And it's an honor to be chosen by the Parliament for this role. I would like to spend, out of the 5 minutes, just one telling you who we are, in case you don't know us, which is more than likely. We are a telecommunications company. We're based in Spain, and we have operations all across America. A key to us is that we are number one, number two taxpayer in most of the jurisdictions where we operate, and it is relevant to what we have done. And I guess I will engage with some of the speeches that were said here before. Back in 2011, we felt the necessity of talking about taxes. Tax is something that has not always been out. We have been great people out there in the accounts without too much exposure. But we felt that it was a necessity of telling the people, telling the society, how much were we contributing to the development and what were we doing. So we decided to start doing so in our annual accounts. At the very beginning, we were given just a couple of pages, and now I think we are almost 5 pages, trying to disclose to the society what do we pay, how do we pay, how much do we pay, why don't we pay sometimes, and what are the impacts of that. The problem of that, and I think that's interesting to this debate, is that we found it really difficult. Really difficult because there's a number of issues that come across when you decide to do this disclosure, such as, for example, what is a tax? What is tax? What do you consider is a tax? What does it include? I will just give you an example. Some of the countries where we operate, namely in Spain and Argentina, we, in some years, we pay more local taxes than corporate income tax. So it is not fair and will not give the governments the right information to take decisions upon that if we only focus on the corporate income tax information. So we decided to think about it, and we have been evolving through the years trying to find out the right way. Since I'm really scared about the 5 minutes limit, I will focus on a couple of messages that I would like to give. First of all, we are definitely most willing to give you as much information as we have. We really want it. And it's not that we don't have an interest in that, because we need you. We need this Parliament and we need the EU to create an even play field. Because it is not fair that some companies, we usually have the biggest building in town. We are regulated, our prices are regulated, we are very easy to target. So we need you to help us in helping us competing with the rest of the players. So we have a deep interest in that. Second interest is, Mrs. Flint said it perfectly. I like very much your intervention. It's about brand. It's about how do our clients look at us and how does the society look at us. So we will really like that information to be public. But, and this is my main point, I think we may not be focusing on the right thing. It's not everything about transparency. It's not everything about information. It's okay to ask for information, but don't forget that that information was already in the hands of the tax authorities that now are we disclosing to. So this is not the main goal. I think we are sometimes in this debate confusing what should we focus on. It's not about trust transparency, which is okay, but that is only a mechanism to get to a complete regulation. The final purpose of this is to make companies pay the right amount of money, not to know how much were they paying at a certain moment. Second, it's not very important to know how much are they paying at a certain moment, but to know how much have they paid through a number of years. There may be a year in which, by coincidentally, you don't make it or you don't make payments. But the information coming from the tax return, believe me when I tell you, is really complicated. And there's a mixture of impacts there. So don't focus on one single data. That is why we put so much focus on the need for, I'm sorry the Italian representative has left, on why don't we want this data to be too much published. It's not that we are scared about it or we don't want, it's because if you just take one single data out of the equation and you make a debate about that, you may be getting to the wrong conclusion. So you have to broaden the picture, if I may say. So I think that we should think twice about what is the final outcome, what are we looking for. And the second big idea that I would like also to give here is that I think that sometimes it might not be all about multinationals, but about countries. So I think it was very good, the speech given by the Vice President. This is about what the EU is going to do to get all the countries in having some similar legislation that can make it homogeneous to take a decision on what the next initiative should be. The problem here is that we have countries fighting among themselves to attract inversion, to attract tax payments, and they are the ones fostering, in fact, some taxpayers to follow certain paths. And Google was mentioned here. I don't want to refresh to mention any company in particular, but I think that Google, in his case, and I think the MP, the UK Parliament did an extraordinary job there, was basing their actions on papers given by countries. So I don't think we should blame it all on multinational. And this is just some thought for you, the members of Parliament, to think about it. It's not all the fault of the multinational, of the taxpayers. And last but not least, don't forget that the final tax payment we are only channels of the chain of value. The final value is paid by the taxpayers and by the VAT, which are really the final ways to capture cash by the countries. So we are here only flows to create value and to create richness in the countries where we operate.
Thank you so much. And then next we go to the trade unions, more specifically to the public service unions here in Europe. We have Nadia Salson from EPSU here with us. Thank you so much for coming.
thank you, and apologies for not being able to be with you earlier on today. And I'm very also honored to be here in Parliament and to replace, and I'm a double times honored because I'm also very flattered to be replacing the ETUC. So what I would like to do is basically, I think you will be aware that the European trade unions, the ETUC and EPSU, but also the international trade union federations, have been strong supporters of public country-by-country reporting. So that what I would like to do is to focus perhaps on some of the main changes that we would like to bring about to the draft directive, which is currently on the table. So I think there are also different many reasons for why we support public country-by-country reporting. First, I think we recognize that today we have a big problem, which is secrecy, and to be more specific, corporate secrecy. And I'm very, I mean, it's very refreshing to hear the representative from Telefonica to be so open about public CBCR, but it's not the case of many other companies, and unfortunately. And the fact is that there are, you know, huge sums of money, trillions, sometimes dirty money, which is being hidden. And one of the questions that we will need increasingly to be asking ourselves is, what is this money for? Is that to gain political influence and power? What we can say from the trade union side is that it's also to help reduce wages. And this is why there is a key central trade union dimension to the issue. So public country by country reporting on tax, amongst other elements, is part of a broader move for tax justice, for social justice, but it's also part of corporate social responsibility, which, as we've been saying now since 2010, when we agreed a number of policy demands with our affiliates, corporate social responsibility starts with paying one's tax. So that's a very basic minimum requirement for corporate social responsibility. And to some extent, we would argue that the proposal on the table is a logical, natural extension of workers' rights to information and consultation, which is already subject to EU legislation. There are a number of directives, and information and consultation rights on restructuring, for instance, and to be able to be in a position to anticipate and better manage restructuring likely job losses. So, in fact, to have access to information on profits, on employees, on assets, on subsidiaries, which is what we want, is just a natural extension of those workers' rights. But as the European Commission puts it, because we in EPSU, we represent public service workers, including in tax administrations, you might wonder, well, you know, what are you bothering about? There is already country-by-country reporting on tax to tax administrations. Well, I think I had the occasion to already mention some of the research we've done here in Parliament. The fact is, and since we've been talking about public CBCR, I have not heard one single affiliate in tax administration saying that they're against public CBCR. And the reason is not to be told how to do their job, because they know perfectly well how to do it, and it takes quite, quite deep skills to do that, but because they need the political support and the public support to do their job. So the more people know about the situation, the more people know about whether companies pay their tax or not, well, the more likely tax administrations will be in a position to do their job. But we also need more investment in those tax administrations, which have been subject to very deep cuts over the past few years. So what are the main changes we are calling for? And I must say that those changes have been actually drafted jointly with the NGOs, not the least Eurodow, Oxfam, Transparency International, and with the support of the ETUC. Perhaps to start off with what we don't want to change, because I understand it's quite topical, is the legal basis. Whatever the legal basis, I've mentioned workers' rights, what we need is co-decision with Parliament. The reason why tax justice, social justice matters are not perhaps going as far as we want to is because of unanimity. So anything some governments might be tempted to do regarding the legal basis, we would say don't touch it. Do leave co-decision, and we trust that we can do also a good job with MEPs, since we've had quite a lot of support from a number of MEPs regarding our campaign on McDonald's, for instance. So the three improvements, they are very simple. It's all about the scope of the directive. It's how to extend the scope of the directive to be truly effective. Public country-by-country reporting is about assessing risk of large companies, so multinationals. So the scope must be also global. And we think that right now, the fact that the proposal is only limited to companies with operations in the EU is far too limited. It should really apply to all companies with operations in and outside the European Union. That should be, I know that there are some arguments about extraterritoriality, which has probably been flagged up earlier on today, and we can come back to this. Now, it means that if we have this global scope of the directive, we don't need the blacklist on tax havens. Now, we think a blacklist of tax havens with sanctions based on objective criteria, not just transparency, but also harmful tax measures, is a very good idea. But it's in the wrong place. It's got nothing to do with the proposal. So if we have that global scope, you don't need to have that blacklist of tax havens, which is good since we just heard that it's unlikely to materialize before the end of next year, and hopefully we will have agreement on the directive before that. Now, the second amendment regards the company threshold, so which is set as 750 million consolidated turnover, which is very high, and it's also complicated. One of the key priorities of the European Commission is better regulation. So why on earth are we going to have different definitions of what a large company is? Can't we agree at European level of, you know, what a large company is? So what we would like to have is to reduce the company's threshold, which, as we know, I mean, the 750 million euros would exclude up to 90% of large companies anyway. So we would like to reduce that to 40 million euros, which would be in line with the Commission's own definition in the accounting directive. So it's a simple measure. It's about coherence and good governance. It's also very important for developing countries, given that very often multinationals will, you know, well, broken down into multiple subsidiaries, and very often that will be smaller companies based in developing countries, even though they can be the largest foreign direct investor. So the third point, which is also regarding the scope, is the number of elements of information data which will have to be disclosed. I fully agree with the representative of Telefonica. You need a comprehensive, I mean, you need public CBCR to be effective to provide a comprehensive data, global, comparable. Now, if you only have one piece of data, indeed it can lead to confusion, it can be misleading. So what we are basically saying that in addition to employees' profits, we need also, and tax paid or not paid, of course, we need to include also sales. It's very important, you know, with the digital companies, extremely important to determine corporate tax, and we need the full list of subsidiaries. We've been working now for a year and a half on McDonald's. I still don't know how many subsidiaries that company has. So I think that's extremely, extremely important to have the list of subsidiaries. And actually, one argument also in favor of that, because the U.S. is often branded as a, you know, what are we doing in Europe? It's not going to please the United States. Well, the United States, the Securities and Exchange Commission, ran a consultation a few months ago on the relevance of extending, deepening public CBCR, but they already require companies to provide the information about subsidiaries. So you don't have to worry about the states, you know, reaction on this one. So that's the three main changes.
We really trust that with co-decision, Parliament, the support of a number of MEPs, I understand that the SND is already in favour of those main changes. I hope that now, decision on who the rapporteur is going to be will be quickly made so that we can, you can start the work, bearing in mind that Council has already started, so you don't want to be left behind. And I think there is one key dimension of the proposal which goes beyond tax, although it's got a lot to do with tax, but it goes beyond tax. It's about transparency on corporate power. And power, with power comes accountability and responsibility. Otherwise, it's called a dictatorship. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Nadia. And now, finally, we are going to hear from the European Commission, because we have Valérie Le Dur here. She's Deputy Head of Unit in the Unit of Accounting and Financial Reporting. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. First of all, I think I will be brief in my introductory remarks, because as we had the speech of our Vice President, that was very informative. I don't want to repeat what he has already said, but I just would like to recall the objectives of our proposal and the content of our proposal in a few words. But of course, afterwards, I would be happy to come back on the comments made by the other panelists. First, let me recall the objectives of our proposal. There have been a number of cases in the press of doubtful tax practices by large multinationals, and this has triggered a lot of public debate and also public outrage about whether our tax systems are efficient and fair. And as there is no easily and widely accessible information on taxes, the public could not have an informed debate on this issue. This is why the primary objective of a proposal is to increase transparency on what taxes companies pay where. This should enable to increase public transparency and to have a more informed debate about the tax behaviors of companies, of multinationals, but also the tax laws of member states, i.e., whether tax laws are achieve their goals, and whether there are loopholes that should be closed. This public scrutiny would increase accountability from multinationals, and we hope could also reinforce public trust in companies' behaviours, which could also be beneficial to the companies themselves. Another benefit of tax transparency could be to promote a fair competition between companies, irrespective of their size, so to have a more level playing field between large multinationals and SMEs. And finally, it could also indirectly contribute to the fight against tax avoidance, building on these democratic debates and reputational effects. That's for the objectives. So, i.e., to increase transparency to enable an effective public scrutiny. Then a few words on the content of our proposal. This proposal is a simple and proportionate way to increase tax transparency and accountability from multinational companies. And I would like to insist on a key word, which is proportionality. That is that the level of transparency should be limited to what is necessary to enable effective public scrutiny. Then another key element of our proposal was that we wanted to strike the right balance between providing a high degree of public transparency and at the same time preserving European companies' competitiveness. So to sum up, we believe that transparency should enable an informed public debate on the problematic of tax avoidance. That's, in a nutshell, what I wanted to say, and then, of course, I would be happy to come back on the specific questions raised.
Great. So now it's my turn to ask, are there any specific questions raised to this panel?
We've heard from the private sector, we've heard from the public service unions, and now the Commission. Don't tell me you just agree with everything that was said. No questions at this point. All right. Then I'm happy to jump in with a question to Telefonica if no one else will. So you say that level playing field is a key concern for you. And with your transparency, and I also hear you saying that you're paying a lot of taxes, do you feel at the moment that the fact that your competitors and other companies might not be paying taxes is undermining your competitiveness? And do you sometimes feel that this tax scandals might be creating just a general suspicion towards every corporate representative? Do you feel that you're being accused sometimes without having done anything wrong? What do you say?
Thank you for your question. I can agree more. I mean, I sometimes feel like the rabbit among the lions, like saying, you know, everyone chases me, you know, and I try to make myself more and more public. And the more public I go, the more chasing I get. You know what I mean? Because I went public and everyone knows about my figures, so everyone entangles into a discussion about my figures. Let me say this. I mean, we would like what we always pursuing is legal certainty. What really scares my shareholders is the threat of a huge tax bill to be paid. So I really encourage the different member states, and I have here the Commission. It was a really, really good news to learn that you were preparing a common consolidated base initiative, because that one failed six years ago. And why did it fail? I mean, let's not be kind of avoiding the elephant in the room. I mean, because most of the countries at the end didn't want it to happen. Because why? The reason why at the very last is because they want to keep their competitiveness, and they want on is kind of the wrong debate, because on one hand they want us to be more transparent and they want to have more information, but on the other hand they don't want to share that information because they want to tax their companies on their countries, and they don't want to share that information with the other countries because they compete with them. So that's where I think that both the OECD and the EU have the most relevant roles, and I think that'd be a great example for the international community if they for once come up with a final common standard that could first of all give us some assurance that anyone doing business in those jurisdictions pay the right amount of taxes, the right one, not more, not less, but the right one. And second, they give us legal certainty that if we stay by certain parameters, by certain safe harbors, we will be accomplishing with the law. Say, for example, brand fees, say management fees, say any type of intercompany charges, just give us a safe harbor. Why don't you give us safe harbors? Let's be real. Let's be open up about that. Because you don't want to. Because countries want to increase their bills on one side, and when they have some multinationals going off, and they don't want the upper companies in their countries to pay those same royalties. Just to put an example on the table. So I think we're really pretty much excited about you guys not doing your job, but you know, putting more things on top, putting more of a level play field on top of the desk. Most of them, companies as mine that are regulated and that cannot do anything funny because we can't, and because we have a strong social responsibility, because we cannot by any means harm our brand. Some companies don't care that much about that. We do care. So, for example, nothing has been said about pointing out who has accomplished with tax transparency. We got no benefit out of that in the sense of, I don't know, some, I won't call it recognition, but some kind of, you know, saying, okay, these guys have accomplished with what they wanted. No? And we have done, and we've proven that we want to do that because we've been putting our information public since 2011. We were the first company to register in the lobby's transparency website. I mean, we've tried to do our job, you know, so that's where waiting, I mean, for, I don't know, a common level play field to be created. Sorry about that. I may have extended myself more than 5 minutes.
Honestly, I really enjoy hearing you talk, so please don't apologize. There is a question in the back from a person I still think is called Antonio Gambini. Over to you.
Thank you. Sorry for monopolizing the floor.
The one concept that keeps being mentioned is that of stability in terms of taxation and of legal certainty. The issue of legal certainty, I agree with that perfectly. I mean, taxes come from the law, and the law should be certain, definitely. The issue of stability, I'm a bit afraid of that concept, on the other hand, because stability, well, to be quite blunt, there should be no stability. Taxes should be decided by parliaments whenever they want, and they should be able to take whatever decision they want. That's what they're there for. Parliament, democratic parliament, are there to decide taxes. And so nobody has a right to ask from the parliament any stability. The parliament is sovereign. The parliament decides one day I will tax you like this, and the next day decides I will tax you like that. It's called democracy. So I would really like to know what is the real meaning of stability in this context.
Sorry, I may have wrongly used the concept of stability. I may have explained myself wrongly. What I meant by stability, of course, you are fully right. It's obvious. The right to change every time they want the legislation. What I mean by stability is a common point of agreement on a certain position. I mean, we have the situation in which some countries, a single transaction, which is done between a country A and a country B, is being challenged both by country B and by country A at the same time. And that's where I say there should be someone, some kind of arbitrage, some kind of referee, some kind of common framework saying this sale has to be made at a certain price, for example, and that is fair. The problem is when, if I sell you this pen for 100 euros, maybe you will say this is too expensive, maybe I will say this is too cheap. Someone or a single framework should say that operation has been done on a business purpose framework. That's what I mean by stability. It means that all countries should agree that certain common rules in terms of taxation should be agreeable in the sense that they should be common to all the common states. Things like, for example, should interest on debt should be deductible or shouldn't it? Or things like, should all the income be taxed or shall certain incomes be exempt? I mean, there is some certain framework that could be agreed among the states so that loopholes could be more difficult to find, if you know what I mean. I don't know if I made myself clear. It's like giving sort of certainty about what you are going to do.
Thank you very much. We also previously heard some issues raised by Nadia on the threshold and the scope, and yes, we're happy to give the Commission some time to answer.
Yeah. We have thought very carefully about all these issues when we developed our proposal. And first, on the question of the scope, I would like to say again that the scope of our proposal is very wide because this is the first time that we capture non-European companies under European legislation, so non-European companies with activities, operations in the EU. And when doing this, we had to comply with some tax legal constraints, so we cannot impose rules on the territories of non-EU countries. We are bound by some international legal constraints. And to do so, we have to demonstrate that it is proportionate to what we are trying to achieve and also that there is a link between the EU and these third countries. And in the case at hand, we thought that for third countries, you know, having disaggregated figures for European countries by member states and an aggregated figure for third countries, leaving aside the issue of the tax havens, is sufficient to have an informed public debate in the sense so that the public can see whether there is a shift of the tax basis from the EU to third countries. So that's for the proportionality and the link. Then there were also competitiveness considerations. so to include, to have this broad scope, EU multinationals and non-EU multinationals, was to preserve the level playing field for our European multinationals. But also there were other competitiveness considerations, in the sense that we don't want, by having disaggregation of figures for the third countries, to disclose sensitive information to the competitors of our companies. Because these companies will not be subject to the same level of transparency. The non-European multinationals with no operations in the EU will not be subject to tax transparency, public tax transparency. So we want to avoid having sensitive information to be disclosed and to be used by competitors. And also there is another risk, the risk of double taxation, because third country tax administrations might use this information not in the proper context, and this might lead to a double taxation for our companies. And then another element we took into consideration was that we didn't want to jeopardize the international agreement. This is very important. You know that there is a movement at the G20 level to endorse this BEPS, this OECD BEPS work stream. And we have seen, you know, thanks to the OECD representative, that the number of countries is already significant. That's for, yes, the first question on the scope. The level of aggregation, disaggregation of the information. And then on this 750 million figure, there again we've tried to reach a balance between, you know, to capture the companies that are the best equipped to engage in aggressive tax planning to use these tax avoidance schemes, and avoiding any unnecessary administrative burden on the smaller companies. And in this case, we also align our approach with the OECD approach, because these companies, these multinationals, will have to send a CBCR report to the tax administration, so it will not entail a lot of cost for them to make public a part of this CBCR report, if you want, because, of course, we do not propose to disclose all the information that would be sent to the tax administration, and the level of details, the level of disaggregation would not be the same. And then I would like also, because there was this 90%, 10% figure mentioned, but I would like to use it the other way around, if you want, because by capturing 10% of the companies, we will capture 90% of the turnover made by these multinationals. So we cover 90% of the turnover, which is quite significant. I think I will stop it for the time being. And
sure. Thank you so much. I think we're going back to Nadia for a quick response to that.
Thanks for the replies first. I think it depends on how you define competition and how you define a multinational. Competition right now, I mean, as it was said by Telefonica representative, the competition is very tough now in terms of tax competition between SMEs and larger companies. Mm-hmm. So the competitive risk that would entail a broader scope of the proposal seemed to us very, very minimalist. And perhaps the fear would be disproportionate compared to the advantages of having a global scope. The second thing is that the European Union is the largest market in the world for now. It might change. It's maybe changing. So it's difficult to imagine any kind of major multinational without any operations in the European Union. So who is competing with whom also? That's the question which to me is not very clear. The sensitivity of information. I mean, this we really fail to see what's sensitive about providing information on profits, which as trade unions we need to do collective bargaining.
It's a simple fact. If you don't know how much profits a company makes, you know, your room for maneuver is extremely limited. You know, you rely on what management is saying. Might be true, may not be true. What's sensitive about knowing the number of employees? Again, to establish a European Works Council, that you need that information, and there's never been any issues of competitivity about providing, how many employees you have. I mean, it shouldn't be a secret. I really fail to see that. Sales, well, sales, that's brilliant. If you're making so much sales, I mean, you should publicize it. You know, and that's what companies do. We are the first one here, the second one there. So the argument about sensitivity, I really fail to understand it. The risk of double taxation, that's been a running argument, and okay, we can take that, and it's true. I mean, this happens. There are examples of double taxation, of companies being taxed twice or even three times by different, governments. However, we are still lacking global estimates of the scale of double taxation. And I understand that the Commission now has come up with a new estimate in the context of another proposal regarding establishing, improving the tribunal in case of double taxation issues. But we really fail to see, again, in terms of proportionality, because that's what you're looking at, proportionality. So what's the scale of double taxation, which means you cannot extend the scope? And that's, again, keeping in your, within your principles, which are very sound principles, by the way. Not to jeopardize the OECD international agreement. Well, I thought that the EU, was always keen on building upon the OECD. And there is the OECD, including the BEPS, there are minimum standards. And someone has to take the lead, to build upon those standards. So to limit now the OECD, it's the same discussion as with minimum wage and maximum wage. I mean, the OECD is not meant to establish some maximum principles. So if you start building upon the OECD, we can dream. In the United States, I think it's probably unlikely right now, but we had some positive moves towards, at least the debate on extending public CBCR in the United States had started. And it's by the EU playing also, leadership that you can do that. But OECD multinational standards, I mean, they are minimum standards. They are not maximum standards. So, and, yeah, as I said, I mean, that's the competition element, which is really, really seem to be the prime argument, doesn't seem to be very, very, very sound. On the contrary, don't you think that if we do not have those data, profits, employees, subsidiaries, etc., outside the EU, broken down country by country, don't you think it will be an incentive for companies to shift even more profits, assets in those countries where there is no obligation for public disclosure on a country basis? Don't you think it will be the opposite that will happen? And here, I think there would be a risk, which is why we really want that directive to be effective. There is an appetite, a public appetite for that. There was a public consultation, large, numbers of replies. And to make it simple, let's keep everybody, sometimes the better regulation agenda seems to be very strong on some issues and very weak on others. So, but to me, there is a risk, that proposal as it stands, risk being harmful to the competition of companies by not extending the scope of the proposal. That's the other way around. I mean, it will bring transparency on much less than needs to be undercovered. So that's for me, it's the other way around. But
great, thank you very much. And I think we'll take a few questions and then we'll go back to the panel. So, yes, please, Caroline Flynn. Oh, yes, and Elish Lightly.
Thanks. I agree with everything Nadia has just said, because the European Union, the Commission seems to have suggested initially that it just wanted to confine its proposals to those operating within the EU because it didn't have a legal power to enforce anywhere else. But then it does seem that after pressure The Commission then went away and found a way to legally justify creating a blacklist of havens. And I can't quite see or understand how you can now have a legal opinion that allows you to seek information from whatever your list is going to be, and that will be interesting as well, just arriving at that, when you couldn't then apply that to a wider field of countries. Because just taking on board Nadia's point, you have your, obviously, activities within the EU, then you have your blacklist. What's to stop, if you haven't got a more global reach, some companies seeking to make tax havens of places that aren't already tax havens, because that's the other route that they can go down. So I'm really not sure that, having conceded once, the legal argument is as strong as it might be not to extend beyond.
Great, thank you. And MEP Elie Schlein, please.
Thanks a lot. I also agree with all that Ms. Salson just said. We met this morning in the Inquiry Committee on Panama Papers, Professor Stiglitz, and he was insisting on the global approach that we need when dealing with tax evasion and tax avoidance, and the zero tolerance for secrecy especially. I think it's very important, not only because I was the rapporteur of the European Parliament on tax avoidance and tax evasion in developing countries. I think it's very important, and the Panama Papers shed a light on the need of having this global perspective in mind. If we think about the impact assessment that we were asking also to the Commission to do at the European level, the impact assessment that some member states have done to see the impact of their own fiscal policies on developing countries. In the case of the Netherlands, it was at least 250 million a year. Can you imagine what it means at the general level? And it is our company that are doing this in the developing countries. That's why I think that the Commission proposal, even if it's a step forward, it falls short of the objective of really keeping an eye also on these countries. And they risk to be excluded from the benefits of such instruments to fight tax avoidance, tax evasion. You have spoken, Ms. Ledour, about the risk to, in a way, harm competitiveness of our companies. But I really don't think that we are harming. I mean, I, as Nadia said, I don't think it's a sensitive, sensible information, the one about how much profits they make and what number of subsidiarities they have in these countries. It's basically all the other competitors can have the information quite clearly even without them being public, and it doesn't give any kind of advantages unless you think that the information of where they operate, in which countries they operate, and where it's reasonable to believe they have found some tax agreements on particular incentives is a fair way to engage in a fair competition. And I don't think this is the case. I don't know if I'm being clear in the explanation, but I think that they should find other fields on which to compete among themselves than not, you know, finding the countries, especially the developing countries, that grants them the most advantages in terms of fiscal competition. And just one last point. I would want to ask to the Telefonica representative if he thinks that the companies have to really be so worried about, you know, it's just a matter of doing something that they do partly already, like having their budgets all together. And I think that the example of the banks being subject to mandatory disclosure of this data showed very well that I haven't seen any banks fail because of these transparency commitments. So if you can say something about this as well, it would be very helpful for us. Thanks.
Thank you very much. So I think we go to Valerie first, and then we go to Angel, and then we go back to the floor afterwards.
Thank you. I will try to answer the best I can. First, about to take the lead, I would like to say that with this public transparency proposal, the Commission is taking the lead, because we are the first jurisdictions to introduce public transparency, and that goes beyond the OECD agreement. So, you know, the OECD agreement is a de minimis agreement, as you mentioned in your view, but we are going beyond and we are taking the lead. Then on the sensitivity of the information, I think it's a combination of this information that can make this information sensitive and that can disclose information to competitors. And for example, let's take a concrete example. If we have a European manufacturing company with, let's say, activities in Brazil. It has a factory in Brazil, and it has just opened this factory. I mean, having a country-by-country report on third countries, disaggregated, and, for example, disclosing information, all this data in Brazil, it might give information to their competitors, the local ones, for example, Brazilian companies, or large companies as well that have no activities in the EU. So there is a risk of disclosing sensitive information. And then about this double taxation, that's true, it's difficult, you know, so to give a precise figure. But if I come back to the number of countries mentioned by the OECD panelists, on the number of countries who have adopted the BEPS work stream and who have signed this multilateral cooperation agreement. So I don't remember exactly what MCAA stands for, but you know this, you have this agreement between countries to exchange information among tax authorities, subject to confidentiality and proper use of the information. And if I remember correctly, more or less, 40 to 50 countries have signed these cooperation agreements. If we deduct 28 European countries, it means that more or less a bit more than 20 countries, third countries, have signed this agreement. And we have 20 countries in the world, I would say. So it means that there are a significant number of countries that have not yet signed these agreements. And well, just to give you maybe an indication or why there is a risk. On the question, why could the Commission proposal ask for disaggregation for the tax havens and not for all third countries? In the case of the tax havens, the question again comes back to proportionality and the link. In that case, there is a higher risk of tax avoidance. So it is more proportionate to ask for disaggregation. And then, of course, if there is a link with this tax jurisdiction, because there should be, you know, if there is no link, no direct transactions within the group between the companies of the group in the EU and the companies of the group in this tax havens, there is no risk of tax avoidance. So this is the first reason why we did this, is that it's for proportionality. And then the risk of sensitive information to be disclosed is lower because usually in these tax havens, you don't have a lot of physical activity in the sense of production or commercial activity. And so if you disclose information, it's less prone to disclose sensitive information about your business development. That's more or less what I wanted to say.
Great. Lorenzo with a question.
Yes, I'm Lorenzo.
I think there was a mispart. I was so honored that you made me a question, so I cannot help.
Apologies, sincere apologies.
I will be very short on that. No worries.
No, please.
No, I think it was a very interesting question, the one you made. I mean, I don't mind at all giving you that information. I'm proud to give it, as I said before, and I'm ready to give it to you. But
Let me put this example. You were talking about Brazil. In Brazil, they consider that social contribution, the social insurances that I pay on every worker, they consider that as a tax. Okay, so I report that in my annual accounts in Brazil as a tax. Okay, if you find out that I'm reporting to you that I pay that as a tax, you won't be happy about that. So you're lying to me. That's not a tax. Okay, because for your standards, that's not a tax. That happens all around the world. In Peru, they do the same. But on a certain difference, with some differences, because only half of your social contributions are considered tax, the other half is not. There's no consolidation, global consolidation in terms of taxes. There's only country-by-country tax rates, so we don't consolidate it. So when you compare how much half I paid in one country with my annual accounts, you're going to find differences. So my whole point is, I'm ready to give you that information, but why do you want that information? What do you want it for? Maybe if you tell me what you want, I can better explain you what am I doing, and I can better help you to take the right decisions. What I'm saying is that I perfectly agree with all these exercises, and we are more than happy to do it. But what I want you is to help you to say, maybe you're not doing the right thing for what you are finally pursuing. You know what I mean? I mean, I don't know if the tax information that you think as the final holy grail of what multinationals do is the right information that you're pursuing. You have all the information about employees, about how much do I make in my annual accounts. All my affiliates are public. They're all quoted in SEC. So they all publish their annual results. Why do you want me to report my tax information here on a single Excel spreadsheet? What for? I don't think it will help you. And on the other hand, if you take, as I was saying, any of those data on a single basis, it may get you to the wrong conclusion. Reason why, there are some tax regulations different from the accounting regulations that make that number completely different to my economical result. I can give you an example. Tax-wise, you can amortize certain goodwills on 1 year. On the other hand, accounting-wise, you have to amortize it through 10 years. You may look to my 2000 and whatever tax return and say, hey, these guys didn't pay any taxes on that year. Say, yeah, that's right. But does it have that anything to do with my economical activity on that country in the whole century? It didn't. You know what I mean? I mean, so I'm happy to give it to you, but I don't think it's a problem itself. It's very costly. And when I tell you about thresholds, providing this information is very costly because I have to separate on each line of my accounting, and no matter if you are 40 million. That's when you talk about 40 million companies, believe me, this is really costly. To find out the right information, to prepare it and to submit it, don't get me wrong, I'm not trying to, I am going to produce it, so I don't have to defend 40 million companies, but believe me, it's very expensive. You're going to put an enormous burden on them to provide this information in the right way. So I think it's another burden, and I think it will distort competition somehow because they will make them invest in systems, invest in filing the right information. You will put it in the public because some tabloids will use that information against them if it's not correctly explained. So I think there's a reason for that threshold. I understand your arguments, but I think it's more complicated than what it looks like. Sorry.
So we go to a quick reply from Nadia, and then we have a whole back row here that's woken up. So we have four questions after that. Okay, if you want, yes. All right, with Nadia's permission, Lorenzo first.
Okay, yes. I'm Lorenzo, an assistant to Mr. Cofferati. Just a question addressed mostly towards Mrs. Ledur. Mostly on the issue of the legal basis, of the challenge of the legal basis by the Council Legal Service. Just a question and two items that I would like to raise. The first, as a question, we now have basically this opinion has been put forward by the Legal Service. Is the Commission envisaging to respond also in written to this opinion by the legal service, because of course we have your initial position, the proposal, the impact assessment, but I believe it would be very useful also if from the Commission side we had a written reply to these observations that the Council Legal Service has raised. And then just two very quick observations, that if the problem is the list of tax havens, you know that from our side, from the Parliament side, we would
I think very, very much like the possibility of just having a full country-by-country reporting, which then deletes any problem with regard to the legal basis, if this is the problem. And apart from this issue, let's say, we have been dealing with country-by-country reporting, as you know, for years now in the Parliament. So we have had the discussion on CRD4, we have had the discussion in the Shareholders' Rights Directive, but I even recall when we had the one in 2013 in the Non-Financial Reporting Directive. And there I want just to highlight a thing which might also be useful for you, because in 2013 the European Council, in its conclusion, asked that the proposal amending the Directive on Disclosure of Non-Financial Diversity Information will be examined notably with a view to ensuring a country-by-country reporting by large companies and groups. So this was the European Council conclusions, and they were asking for country-by-country reporting to be inserted in the Non-Financial Reporting Directive. And it was naturally under co-decision, ordinary legislative procedure, so also from a consistency point of view, this is not really, let's say. And so just these observations, and if I could get a reply, whether you want to reply in written to the observations. Thanks.
Great, and we have a question in front. Okay, we go to the back. The lady on the right.
Hello, I'm Rocha Donnet. I work for Oxfam on tax inequality, and I'd like to come back on your question, sir, on why do we want this information and what to do with it, because Oxfam published this year a report analyzing the data on the French banks, and from what we've been doing with that report, it's clear that if we have a partial picture of country-by-country reporting data, then we can't tell anything, because you can compare between countries. So what can you say if you see suddenly the productivity per employee in Ireland for a bank, for a French bank, is 700,000 per employee per year, while in France, where the company is headquartered, it's only 40,000 a year. If you can't compare this, so this is only for European countries just because it's striking as a figure, but if you can't compare that also with what's going on in Brazil or Ghana or Singapore or Hong Kong, because we are not sure these countries might be backlisted, then what can you say? You might be only able to guess that there could be some profit shifting outside the EU, but have no idea what's going on. So without a full picture, if we speak of proportionality, then the tool is a bit useless, I'm afraid. And that's from an experience approach that I'm telling this to you today, because we've been going into the data and we've been analyzing those. Now that was a first comment. And then on the why, it's not primarily to name and shame companies. That's not our aim. Our aim as CSOs is to reform the tax system and to alter government. So when you took the example of Brazil, which is very interesting, by the way, we're interested mostly in corporate income tax, just to be clear, because that's what is decreasing, a side comment. But then you can go to the government and say, look, there is a problem and we need to reform. So the idea is not to go and look at what's happening for one single firm. In fact, our report of Oxfam France was looking at more than one bank, because it's a systemic issue, but to then hold our own government, which are granting tax breaks, tax incentive to account. And now I have two questions for you back. It is, don't you think this information will be useful for companies too? Because I'm a bit surprised that as a multinational, you don't know how much tax you pay on a consolidated basis. I mean, if you don't have all the data, I'm a bit concerned if you don't know how much tax you pay or how much employees you have per country. Don't you think it's a bit risky? Don't you think there could be some liabilities in time, and that investors might also have an interest in that data to know where it is more profitable to invest in the future? Thank you.
And to your left, Antonio Gambini. For the last time today, I think.
Thank you. About the issue of extraterritoriality, I wanted to try to understand the reasoning. Because, first of all, as I see it, this directive is not extraterritorial at all, because it's about companies that operate in the EU. So if the criteria
for extraterritoriality was the location of corporate headquarters, that would be a gigantic disaster because the entire European legislation could be avoided simply by moving the corporate headquarters to, Liechtenstein. And thereby you would be allowed to avoid all European legislation. So that doesn't sound a bit strange to me. Second point, there are two precedents. The CRD4 directive on banking, which considerable public CBCR, and the extractive industry partial public CBCR. So if we say that there is a problem of extraterritoriality, we are saying that these two directives are illegal. So again, that is very scary. There are two directives on the books that are extraterritorial and that should, therefore, are illegal. So I'm very scared. And the third point is obviously the blacklist. How can it be a good extraterritoriality when it's a tax haven on the blacklist, and it's an unacceptable extraterritoriality when it's another country? I fail to see the legal argument on that. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Antonio. And yes? Yes, please, go ahead.
Good afternoon. I'm Johan Barros from the Federation of European Accountants. Just to follow up on the discussion that's been going on here about the comparability of the data, et cetera, et cetera. I would actually like to ask Mrs. Ledoux a question that Mrs. Pervos-Beres, I think, asked from Dombrovskis earlier, but Dombrovskis, I guess he was in a hurry, didn't really have time to specifically answer that. Has the Commission been, or is the Commission planning to be in touch with organizations like the ISB in order to find some kind of a global approach, common approach, common standard when it comes to public CBCR? Thanks.
Great. And I believe this is your last chance to ask a question, if there are any further questions, because otherwise we are going back to the panel and we will give them time to both answer all your great questions as well as summarize and make concluding remarks. And Angel, do you want to start with the responding and also giving us your closing remarks for today? Oh, yes, of course. Ana Gomez, please.
I have one question to make. It's not necessarily on, but it could be linked to country by country reporting and especially also on the prevention of money laundering. What is your view on having a centralized official EU updated list of PEPs, because most of the information we could get on making it now this question, but it's for another context.
All right, excellent. I see you point about, should we start with Nadia for the closing remarks and the answers, since I think Angel had the last comment, and you deserve a chance to reply.
Yeah, right. Okay, maybe a bit of a cliche, but when there is a will, there is a way. So on the extraterritoriality argument, I think we do have some examples, but perhaps not necessarily in DAC4 or really closely relating to the directive that's on the table. But we have examples coming from the US. I mean, the US, through the FATCA, has got some tiny, whiny bit of extraterritoriality in it. I wouldn't be concerned. It's politics. It's discussing. It's negotiating. But at EU level, we have, on the blacklist, we have a blacklist of airline companies here. And I don't think you would have thought that an airline company not to base your judgment on whether an airline company could be dangerous or not would be based on a global landscape, you know, the sky. So you wouldn't actually say, I'm not worried if I don't have any record of that airline company outside the European Union. And if all is fine in the European Union, then I can use that airline company. So I think the extraterritoriality, I mean, perhaps it would take, and I don't know whether, I mean, maybe one question for Parliament, whether there will be some kind of, you know, clever legal expert, but to use those examples, which I'm not sure we are really breaching over a major legal hurdle here on the extraterritoriality. And again, this, in public country by country reporting, it's to provide the complete, or try to provide the complete picture of a company's economic activity. Yeah. And we know that tax, so why to respond to the person from Telefonica, sorry, I don't have the agenda before my eyes. I mean, what is it for? I mean, we know that, unfortunately, there's been quite a tendency by some companies to not pay their fair share of tax. And it's true that we don't know that, unfortunately, from governments. We know that from research institutes, from NGOs, from trade unions, from journalists, from whistleblowers. And you were concerned and you were like a bit scared and feeling like a rabbit, you said, because you are so open. And I wish Telefonica was present in Belgium because I would perhaps subscribe to Telefonica. But I mean, the whistleblowers are risking, you know, years, I mean, can be put in jail for what they do. They are the one really taking some risk. So I think what you're doing is great, and we need some companies, you know, when slavery was abolished, you know, some companies decided not to use slaves. And, you know, you need always some good companies, some good governments. So continue. Just keep on doing your job, you know. And I'm sure that, you know, it will be an incentive for others. And to go back to Aurore's argument, the investor's argument, you know, to have full clarity on what a company does, you know, should, if we're trying to get more ethical investment, well, those investors will probably opt for Telefonica and not another one. So you shouldn't be worried, I think, if, you know, in a kind of ideal world. Now, the use of information, I think it's very important, and I will finish off here, because it's true that, one, when you're concerned about the administrative burden on companies, okay. How much exactly? And I'm sure that, you know, if you find it too complicated, I'm sure that there will be some nice public tax advisors that can help you do the job. You know, I think that's, I don't think it should be overestimated. But what our key concern is that also for tax administrations right now, I mean, have very little resources to process the information, that's one thing, but also have very little political backing. So, of course, this information will be used when it's available, will be used by NGOs, Oxfam's done a study, etc., will be used by trade unions for collective bargaining because we are fed up with being cheated on wages. So we want to get those data, and I think that's just fair. That's, but it will also be used, it will ensure that it's used by tax administration because there will be a public knowledge about it that will bring the pressure, which I'm sorry is really needed right now. If we don't do that, well, we'll continue as much as we can doing our job, which is also, I'm sorry to say, but naming and shaming some companies, because McDonald's, IKEA, other companies which have been, well, actually 300 companies through the Lex Leaks, you know, so that's quite a lot, you know, we'll continue doing this. And then you can argue, oh, well, the information is not complete, you know, it's not, then you can continue, you know, there will be more reputational risk if we do not have global public CBCR than there is now. I will close here.
Great. Angel, for a response and closing remarks.
Thank you very much. Again, it's been really interesting to participate in this debate. I would like to answer the lady in the back question. Of course, I know how much I pay in the world. I know how much by country. I do know. I have that information. My point was that when I get a tax audit in any of the countries, or say McDonald's, you were mentioning it, when they are audited in the United States, where their, I guess, their holding is, the United States could easily ask about their information about how much they were paying in any of the countries where they operate. What I mean is that the information, if I pay taxes in a country, the information is both on my hands and in the country's hands, because the country knows how much taxes I am paying in that particular country. So why do you put the focus on the companies? I'm just trying to help you make the debate to get to the right conclusions. Why do you put all the focus on the taxpayer and not on the tax collector?
who perfectly knows how much am I paying in that country. You were mentioning some over-the-top companies that were operating in Ireland. Doesn't the Irish government know how much taxes are those companies paying in Ireland? They believe me, the Irish government knows how much they're paying them, and they know how much income they're making there. So don't put the focus. I'm just saying, I mean, I'm perfectly happy to take the challenge and to give you all the information that I have, of course, but don't miss it. What I'm trying to tell you is that I am not the only partner here. There's two partners here. There's me, but there's also the different governments that do want to compete among themselves to capture more income. Why was I mentioning the common standard? If we were all governed by the same rules, if the tax rules were the same in all the countries where we were operating, my fair share of tax will be paid where it should, because the rules will be the same in any country that I will. Problem is that the tax rules are not the same, not only in all the countries where I operate, but not for the same taxpayers. Let me put it the other way. I am subject to certain tax rules. Some of my competitors are not subject to the same tax rules. And that is a problem that the governments have to tackle. I can't tackle it. I can give you information. By the way, all the information that you need is also in my annual accounts. So this thing of creating a new way of reporting is fine with me. I will fulfill it, but don't get me wrong. Information is in my annual accounts. You have access to it. I know I can make it difficult for you to access it, but at the end, it is in my annual accounts. I mean, I don't, because I full disclosure it, but if I want it, I can make it. But there are some accounting, and there's a representative, there are some accounting standards that make it very difficult for me to hide if I fulfill the rule. So what I mean is that this debate is great, and I think we should pursue it, and I really encourage you to follow on, and again, we are where you're here, but don't miss the point. I mean, maybe we should think twice about what are the final goals that we want to achieve with this piece of legislation.
Great. And passing on to Valerie, perhaps also to comment on that question as well as to do the summarizing remarks. What's the point of all this?
I think to come back on what Angela has just said, that's true that the information is already, most of the information, if not all, is already available somewhere, but it's just that it's difficult to access for the public because it's in individual financial statements. So if you have a group like Telefonica with operations in different countries, you have to go in each country to find out the financial statements and then to recollect everything, to recompile everything. So what we want to do is to make this information easily accessible and comparable so that there can be an informed public debate on these tax issues. But then I would like to come back to a few questions raised by the audience. First, on the legal basis, what I can tell you is that the Commission strongly believes that our legal basis, Article 40, the right of establishment, is sound, and will continue to defend our proposal, and our Vice President has clearly said so in his speech. Now, the question about the next steps, it will depend how the Presidency and the Member States react to this Council legal service, because it's a legal service, an opinion of a service, the legal service of the Council. So Member States will have to react and we'll see what the next steps will be. On this extraterritoriality issue and the examples of CRD4 extractive, I want to reassure you, CRD4 extractive are fully legal, and I was not clear enough before maybe, but there is a big difference between these two precedents and our Commission proposal on tax transparency. Under CRD4 and the extractive legislation, only European companies are covered by these legislations for the operations controlled from the EU. While, so in the case of the CRD4, for example, non-European banks are not covered by this legislation. And then, if we go back to the Commission proposal on tax transparency, you mentioned that it's normal that companies, non-European companies that operate, that have operations in the EU, are covered. But we cover them, but we ask them to report on their global operations, so also on operations not controlled from the EU. That's a big difference. So we ask non-European multinationals to report on the non-European operations. And that's why there has been a big debate, you know, on whether how far we could go, etc. And there has been the example of the airline, the blacklist of on the airline companies. I don't know, you know, the technicalities, etc. And the FATCA. But I guess in these two examples, there is a link with the EU. You have planes flying in or flying out from the EU, and that the FATCA, I guess also, but you know, to be checked. But the hook for the US authorities is the banking license in the US. You know, you so there is a link all the time with the jurisdiction. But just to try to explain you that it's not that easy and there are legal constraints to be taken into account. I'm looking at my notes to see whether I miss anything. Then to conclude, what I would like to say is that we really have to keep in mind what the objective of our proposal is, and that is to increase tax transparency. Whenever I use tax, I sometimes get confused, but increase tax transparency to enable an effective public debate, democratic debate, on the behaviors of companies, but of course as well on the tax laws of member states, because it's member states, it's countries that set these tax laws. So that's why, keeping in mind this objective, then we have to ask ourselves, what is the right scope? What kind of information do we need? So this legislation is not there to help tax authorities conduct their tax works, their work. You have the implementation of the BEPS agreement, the OECD agreement, in European legislation for that purpose. So I would like, you know, not that you keep in mind these two different objectives, and so the two legislations are different. And then I will end with this statement.
Thank you, and thank you to you all. And lastly, we now go over to Evelyn for concluding remarks on today's conference.
Also, ich möchte gleich vorweg einmal sagen, herzlichen Dank an alle, die sich da jetzt so intensiv eingebracht haben, an die Vertreter von Unternehmen wie Telefonica, der Gewerkschaften, der Europäischen, natürlich der Kommission, die wunderbar erläutert hat, was die Motivation, die Gründe sind für diesen Vorschlag, natürlich auch an den Kommissionspräsidenten und vor allem auch an die vielen praktischen Beispiele wie jenes aus Großbritannien. Wir sehen ja, wo ein Wille ist, da ist ein Weg, und es gibt viele gute Beispiele, aus denen wir lernen können. Auch mein großer Dank an all die NGOs, Vertreter von Bürgerbewegungen, die es nicht mehr aushalten, dass wir in dieser unendlich ungerechten Welt leben, dass es möglich ist, dass Unternehmen über Briefkastenkonstruktionen von einem Land ins nächste intransparent letztlich Gewinne verschieben und die diese der Öffentlichkeit verloren gehen, die diese Einnahmen natürlich absolut erstens einmal dringend braucht. Und die zweitens bedeuten, dass es sich um einen unfairen Wettbewerb handelt. Einen Wettbewerb, der letztlich all diejenigen, die bereit sind, schön brav ihre Steuern zu zahlen, letztlich natürlich immer wieder in eine schwierige Situation bringt und Druck erzeugt. Also es geht immer wieder um fairen Wettbewerb und dass Europa da auch seinen Beitrag zu leisten hat. Natürlich ist es notwendig, global vorzugehen, das ist keine Frage. Aber Europa ist doch, also die Europäische Union, ist nicht nur die bedeutendste Marktwirtschaft der Welt als Markt, sondern natürlich gerade auch jetzt umso mehr vor dem politischen Hintergrund, in dem wir uns jetzt bewegen müssen nach den US-Wahlen, aber natürlich auch schon vorher, absolut gefordert, etwas zu tun.
diese Steuern brauchen wir. Worum geht's? Wir haben das gehört jetzt während des ganzen Nachmittages. Es geht um Berichtspflichten. Es geht darum, darzulegen, was Unternehmen letztlich dann nämlich entsprechend auch liefern sollen an Daten, damit eben diese Steuerpflicht auch entsprechend erbracht werden kann. Transparenz ist immer der erste Schritt. Transparenz bedeutet, dass ich einmal verstehe, was sich da alles im Dunkeln tut. Und es tut sich sehr viel. In den letzten Jahren, wenn nicht Jahrzehnten, ist es durch Konstruktionen von Steuerprüfern, gefinkelten Rechtsanwaltskanzleien immer mehr gelungen, zwar unendlich viel Daten zu liefern, aber diese so verschlüsselt zu liefern, dass sich kein Mensch mehr auskennt und wir dann weniger vielleicht vor dem Problem der Doppelbesteuerung als der Doppelt-Nicht-Besteuerung stehen und daher genau diese Berichtspflichten entsprechend soweit vereinfacht, angenähert auf ein einigermaßen brauchbares Level-Playing-Field gebracht werden sollen. Daher jetzt nur mal aus Sicht der Zusammenarbeit an S&D-Abgeordneten, die besteht und die natürlich unendlich eng ist, sowohl mit Elly Schlein im Entwicklungsausschuss als auch natürlich unserem Verantwortlichen, dem Hugues Bayet im ECON, arbeiten wir daran, diese Eckpfeiler für den Bericht einzuschlagen. Und die sind, und da ist natürlich auch immer sehr viel Verhandlungsspielraum und Masse, und das hängt natürlich auch mit der politischen Landschaft dann an sich zusammen, denn es verstecken sich ja noch viele, die mit ganz anderen Argumenten kommen als wir jetzt, nämlich, dass es natürlich erstrebenswert ist, bei der Schwelle diese nicht so hoch anzusetzen, wie das jetzt von der OECD vorgegeben ist, sondern um einiges niedriger. Mit den 40 Millionen haben wir natürlich auch schon Standards gesetzt. Es geht ja auch immer wiederum darum, darauf zu achten, wollen wir da jetzt immer wieder neue Schwellen einführen. Das ist auch für Unternehmen, auch für diesen fairen Wettbewerb äußerst schwierig. Aber ich bin mir natürlich dessen bewusst, dass wir dann schauen müssen, wie schaut es aus in der politischen Landschaft im Europäischen Parlament, aber dann natürlich auch später noch, wenn wir schauen, wie die Debatten im Rat, in der Ratsarbeitsgruppe laufen. Und was natürlich Kernthema ist, das ist natürlich immer wieder die Frage, die eben aus unterschiedlichsten Blickwinkeln von Ihnen, von euch heute beleuchtet worden ist. Gelingt es, ein echtes Country-by-Country-Reporting einzuführen, eine echte länderweise Berichterstattung, so wie wir sie auch erwähnt in anderen Feldern bereits haben? Oder werden wir uns auf die zweitbeste Rückzugsoption, wie sie von der Kommission letztlich vorgeschlagen wurde, einigen müssen? Hier gibt es viele Fragezeichen, hier gibt es viele Kritikpunkte, Loopholes, Schlupflöcher, all das müssen wir uns noch näher anschauen und immer wieder darauf hinweisen, dass wir die Argumente der Kommission natürlich sehr ernst nehmen, aber dass wir da als Europäisches Parlament hoffentlich weitergehen können. Und schließlich noch, um mehr oder weniger den Elefant im Raum und auch gerade die Mitgliedstaaten besonders hervorzuheben, die sind zwar in den Ratsarbeitsgruppen schon weiter, als wir es derzeit sind. Ich versichere aber, wir als Europäisches Parlament sind, wenn es darauf ankommt, verdammt schnell. Und was wir sehen, wie die Debatte derzeit im Rat verläuft, habe ich natürlich schon einige Bedenken. Das Gutachten, das wir jetzt zur Rechtsgrundlage bekommen haben, das lässt schon einiges erahnen, dass es hier schon einige gibt, die versteckt gar nicht rechtliche Argumente suchen, denn die entbehren tatsächlich jeder Grundlage, sondern es politische Argumente letztlich sind, warum man etwas vielleicht doch nicht so haben möchte. Die im Dunkeln sieht man nicht. Wir müssen sie ans Licht holen, weil sonst wären wir über diese Transparenzpflichten nie letztlich zu den Steuereinnahmen kommen. Und daher noch einmal, das politische Moment ist jetzt da. Wir haben großartige Unterstützung aus den diversen Ausschüssen, aus der Arbeit von Taxe 1, Taxe 2, jetzt im Panama-Untersuchungsausschuss eine Bewegung, die auch fraktionsübergreifend ist. Und ich achte sehr darauf, wenn gerade die Gegner der Transparenzinitiative, die wir ja jetzt haben, die da auch zeitlich auf die Tube drückt, wenn gerade die Gegner sagen, schauen wir uns das näher an, schauen wir, wie schaut es aus in Nevada und in Delaware, warten wir ein bisschen, wir wollen mehr oder weniger da ja nicht zu schnell sein, weil sonst ist das wieder ein Wettbewerbsnachteil für uns. Hier können wir natürlich nur sagen, dass es dem nicht nur Europa letztlich gut getan hat, wenn wir
bei den Themen, bei Finanzmarktregulierung, bei all diesen Themen, wo wir schon Gas gegeben haben, letztlich einiges bewegt haben, sondern dass es dann auch bei globalen Bestrebungen natürlich ein gutes Argument ist, dass Good Old Europe, wenn es um demokratische, um steuerliche Standards, aber vor allem um Transparenzvorschriften, wenn es um Berichtspflichten geht, wirklich noch der Kontinent ist, der Gas geben kann. Also in dem Sinne ein herzliches Dankeschön an Sie alle, an euch alle, die ihr jetzt noch auch euch aktiv eingebracht habt und hoffentlich unsere Arbeit weiter unterstützen werdet. Dankeschön vor allem auch den wunderbaren Staff der S&D, die die Vorbereitungsarbeiten getroffen hat, und an unsere Moderatorin heute am Nachmittag, an Tove Riding. Und in dem Sinne möchte ich euch allen noch einen guten Tagesausklang wünschen, aber vor allem viel Energie für die Arbeit, die noch auf uns zukommt.
Вы что, стой, вот, вам, Саша, вы знаешь, что вы